Sometimes it's not a usual thing to get that privilege. Out of the sheep and the scattered. Okay. Can we start, honorable members? CEO of the regulator, welcome with your team. I hope it's not an adjusted team because of what other people will hear and roasted. I'm trying to imagine in me whether really you used to be as a representative. Or you saw the roasting of others were here and they decided to. The only people that I know for sure when they come here, we won't ask those questions except when they are reported is the state diamond trade. Alright, we can't question them. But it's okay. You can also introduce a team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon to everybody, members of the committee. Chairperson, before I can introduce anybody, I would like to extend apologies for my Chairperson. And I think the reason for that is that we got the invitation late, but I think it was technical and I've discussed it with my underboss. She sent the invite to my PA who's on leave, and she also went on leave. And my PA actually kicked it back. But unfortunately, Ayanda was also on leave and out of town. So I don't blame anybody. I think it's just a technical leave. It was a bit of leave. So we only got the invitation on the 10th. We informed our chairperson, but it seems there were other.
Oh, yeah, chairperson.
There's no Bulelo. Yes. So I extend the apologies. And thank you again. Without any waste of time, let me start. In her absence, Ms. Nombule, our chairperson, I'm here as the CEO. Leather Up is my name. And I am with the CFO on my left, Ms. Irene Shifura. And I've got the two secretaries on my right. It's Linda Mkumisha and Karabo Swanyoni and Extreme. Right, it's the General Manager for Compliance, which is units for diamonds and precious metals. And I must introduce him properly because Mr. Koza, since your teacher Koza is new in the department, in the organization, he started the 1st of April, but he's not new in the mining industry. He's got quite a an experience in the mining industry. Previously, he used to work for the department, and his qualifications also speaks well for where he is now. And we think he will make quite a significant input into the regulator to help us. He worked quite a lot in Northwest, and as you have asked me, he knows those areas. And I think I'm going to give him that project that me and we talked about to go through. So he knows those areas.
As long as you are fully aware that members of parliament are subject to the rule of declaring.
I am aware of that.
Okay.
This was said actually in the committee.
When is a diamond regulator having something to do with a member of the parliament? It's okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. but thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm aware of those rules. I just mentioned it might have been forgotten. She specifically asked it in the committee about us to see those areas. Yes. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, for doing justice to this document, which is a presentation, I'm going to account for every page, but I'm not going to go through every page. But I'm going to say, and the reason for that is that there are some of the things that have changed. Both reporting to you on this program that we are here for, and also on the annual report. As you see the presentation outlined there, I'm just going to skip it, you heard it. This page also, I'm not going to say much about it. It's the background of the organization, where it comes from, pre-2007 post. We have already, in the past, outlined that what is important in this page and the following page is events that happened in 2007, because there were amendments, as you know, our act, the Principal Act of 19...
Honorable Mbadi, do you have a copy?
No, he has a copy. It's not sure as to whether he has a copy. He was moving out.
No, I'm through.
Can you
protect? No, I was asking, copy, but I'm interested. I'll read from the...
I was asking it, so, because he says he knows what is written there.
Yeah,
he's going to account. So, in the event, he just rushes through, you may not have a way of making a reference. That's what I was asking.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Continue, sir. So, I don't know whether I must put somebody between
the two. There was somebody departed. Now he's rather
than you. I don't know. I don't know.
So, thank you, Chair. So, in this slide, in the following slide, what is important just to mention to members is that besides that it was important also to be put there because they were trying to make you aware of the changes or the changes that happened in 2007, which were informed by the First and Second Amendments and the introduction of the Precious Metals Act. The First and the Second Amendments were actually introducing certain activities like the formation of the SDT, the State Diamond Trader, the introduction of the Diamond Export Levy Act, the Diamond Export Levy Administration Act, and of course, as I said, the Precious Metals Act. I'm going to skip it. They introduced that. We all know that the regulator is a Section 3A, and that's one of the reasons why the regulator came into 2007 to make sure that some of these things are first. Of importance is the mandate that the regulator was supposed to do. They presented in the past our objectives. They haven't changed. They're still the same. But what I must report on, Chair, that everything that I'm going to report about our strategy was aligned to the national development. You will pass those slides. I'll just pass them just to show you this is how we did it. We are not going to go through it. They were aligned to that. Together also aligned to the State of the Nation address, because we see from what is in the State of the Nation address. What I want to say of importance here is the bullets, the last bullet here on this slide number 5, which says one of the objectives to advance objectives of the broad-based social economic empowerment as prescribed. The reason why I'm saying that it talks about the charter. What I'm going to report at the later stage, it talks about us trying to make sure that some of the elements of charter are achieved as required. And perhaps somebody could say, but isn't it this a responsibility of mining? I just want to mention that in terms of the First Amendment, this was incorporated, the charter, specifically to make sure that the regulator also are responsible to making sure that there's transformation in this cluster. And that is captured in Section 5.2A of the Diamond Amendment Act 29 of 2005. I'm just mentioning it so that somebody might ask, but we are not doing mining. This is a mining charter. It has been incorporated for reasons. The next slide here, it's like the mandate that I've talked that we are Schedule 3A public entity, and those are the acts that appear there, the Principal Act 56 of 1986 and its amendments, and those Diamond Export Levy, Diamond Export Levy Administration and the Precious Metals are acts that we use to regulate this industry. The next slide is just the organizational structure. Next to each component there, we have put the number of people there, but the entire component is 126 employees. The complement is 126 employees. Now, the reason why we are here today, annual performance plan 2015-2016. What we have planned in terms of the MTEF until 2020, but we are just going to concentrate on the annual performance plan for 2015-16. I've already mentioned that it has been aligned to the national development plan, the national outcomes, state of the nation, and all applicable legislations. I've also mentioned some. And that is now our strategic objectives, which I say they have not changed. Chairperson, I can read them. The first one is to improve competitiveness, sustainable development, and job creation in the department and in the diamond and precious metals industry, to transform the diamond and precious metals sectors, to promote equitable access to resources to local beneficiaries, which comes, as I've said, from charter. It's one of the elements of the charter. To enforce compliance with legislative requirements and to improve organizational capacity for maximum execution for excellence. If you take the previous presentation, you'll see some things are still the same. That is our strategic objective linked to the national development plan, as I've said. In that one, you'll find that we have our strategic plan, the NDP priorities, and the NDP focus areas, and we link them to our objectives on them. Now, our strategic objective number one, how are we going to, unfold the process of achieving it? And we have key activities that we say will issue licenses, will assist new entrepreneurs, will facilitate skills development, and will oversee provision for issuing beneficiation licenses. That is that activity number one, which is to improve competitiveness. Activity number two, to transform the diamond and precious metals, we say we promote participants of HDSA in the diamond and precious metals. It can only be transformation if you address the imbalances of the past. And we are going to try and decrease the number of inactive businesses, at which you will realize in the challenges that there is a decline actually into this industry because of some economic factors that have also been mentioned during the DG's presentation. And the strategic objective number three is to improve equitable access. The key activity will have to increase access to diamonds for local beneficiaries Strategic number four, to enforce compliance with legislative requirements. Those are the six key activities that will happen. To conduct diamond valuation services, improve diamond valuation services, product inspection services, conduct compliance inspection. And when I talk about compliance inspection, I think I must also confirm, as we have asked the President, that once the thing has been mentioned, we must just, and DG did mention that the regulator also go do the inspections on new premises in the diamond and precious metals. So yes, I confirm that is our duty. On slide number 16, strategic objective 5, to improve organizational capacity to do more of the support services that we get from these organizations that we are talking about, the human resource, ICT, and all those support mechanisms that support us. And we say we have to also make sure that they implement the approved human resource plan. This was one of the findings of the AG, but it's water under which we have fixed it. It's happening now. We are going to improve the approved SNPMR communication policy. We have done that already, and we implemented minimum information security standards. This is things that must happen on a yearly basis, and all those that I mentioned there, and provide legal support to the regulator. Slide number 17 is what I chairman want to talk about. I think this is actually giving now the committee sort of a progress of what we reported in the past, that the board saw it very necessary that they must establish through the licensing committee this agenda of looking into the transformation agenda. And I think it's after realization that you don't get a report that shows you that there's an achievement in the other elements. And to that effect, we also appointed dedicated officials that will actually follow and see why we are not achieving some of the things. Critical that we are looking at is that those elements of the charter, ownership, human resource development, which embraces a lot of things, skills development and so on, and procurement and employment equity. But today, all of this, also job creation, because it's all about that as well. Now, with the creation of this transformation team that I'm talking about is busy exposing companies that were misrepresenting their compliance with the charter. They went down and do the verification and want to see whatever the companies were reporting. And I can, Chairperson, with, you know, comfort, report that there is a change that is happening. Through this dedicated committee, corrective measures are starting to take form after serious warning of possible suspension or revoking of licenses were issued to defaulters. I'm very happy about this, and I think the board is also realizing that this is something that we could have done maybe long ago, because now go to the companies one by one, we give them time frame to say, if you have not done this, these are the actions. So some of the things that they were putting, like ownership, they were not there. It was something that you see, but underneath it was not there. But now we are revealing it. We want to see it in terms of all the paperwork that must be there. So things are happening, but we reported about it in the introduction of the matter. I think we should keep. Now, the last thing that I wanna discuss before I go to the challenges and the remarks, it's this also. If you recall, back the minister announced that the department will also be supporting the creation of the establishment of the boss. And to that effect, I was given task as one of my objectives to research the establishment of this boss that we're talking about. Chairperson, I can also report with comfort that we didn't just achieve the research, but we also produced a concept document as to how this thing must unfold and how this animal must look like. We were informed by research that we did, Chairperson, from other bosses that are there in other countries. Many countries who are diamond, not only diamond producing, who are also trading in diamonds, have been asked in joining this World Federation of Diamond Bosses for purposes of enhancing trade, but also stimulating the manufacturing in those countries. And they are doing very well. We showed case with other countries, but because there are 27 bosses all over the world, we just chose those that also have been there that are more active or big, so to say. And we use the Antwerp in Belgium, the Shanghai in China, Dubai, Diamond Exchange in Dubai, and of course the Russian Federation. As we all know that the Russian state owns all the minerals. There's a company that they've established that works there. So we also learned from there. What I can say, Chairperson, we didn't have to spend money to go there. We did this during our normal duties that we were supposed to perform on those countries. Either it be the Kimberley process attending the conferences, and we coupled with this and did this research. Otherwise, others will just look at on the internet and do that research. And as I've said, we have produced that concept document last year in October. We have given it to the board of directors for their consideration. In the last meeting that they had, they have indicated that let it come formally through the technical committee, which normally deals with issues of this nature. And I can also report the progress on that, that tomorrow, Chairperson, the technical committee will be looking at this, and they are required to report to the board and recommend this concept document to be adopted to the board in the next meeting that will be held also this month on the 29th. I think the outcome of the board decision on the 29th will inform the following steps, which may include consideration of the concept documents by the Department of Mineral Resources and eventually for cabinet approval. This is where we are in terms of this document. And as I said, the minister in his budget board speech, he mentioned this thing, and now we have to really move with it. And this is the progress where we are at the moment. And the next slide it's the slide on budget, Chairperson. But I will do justice on this slide as well. I will just allow the CFO just to take you through on this slide before we get to the next slide. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Member. In order for us to achieve our strategic objectives, we have projected the following budget. We have the cost as being the grant or part of appropriation, where we are being granted for the year 2015, 50,527,000. And we also have our in-house generated revenue for the services that we render to the industry, where we have projected 38,267,000. And in total, the total budget that we have projected is 88,794,000. We have projected expenditure of 88,466,000, leaving us with a little surplus of 328,000. The main cost driver on the expenditure side are our remuneration, our audit fees, our board and the committee fees, our accommodation leases, our travel and subsistence, which include the cost of inspection, going out and doing those inspections that were mentioned by the CEO, and the Kimberley process certification program that is one of our main mandates to attend to. So there are compulsory meetings and committees that must be attended annually. So a chunk of our budget also is also projected in that. And also the inventory, we utilize a lot of tamper-proof materials, which are our certificates that must hold high security and water masks and the lot, so they are quite expensive. And those are the main cost drivers in the expenditure side. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sifu. Now, in conclusion, Chairperson and members, I would like us to look at the last slide, which talks about the challenges that we have. Of course, there's no way that we can just run smooth. In the past, our very best in most of our reports was inadequate allocation from National Treasury or from the department. But we have realized, looking at the years, the consistency of the amount that we've been getting, as the CFO was showing you the sense, that it does not help to put this thing as a challenge every time. Let us look into measures that can actually assist us. We have left it out now, but I need to talk of all of these challenges. Very critical now that we see is lack of funding in the diamond industry, especially for diamond beneficiation. And we think that perhaps maybe consideration must be given by government to establish a funding mechanism that can accommodate new entrants into this. As we all know that in this industry, beneficiation, especially in diamonds, is the only one that actually creates a lot of jobs in terms of the benches that are created to beneficiate. Another challenge is a pending legislative amendment. Chairman, which members, you are witness to this. Our amendments are dependent on the key legislation from the shareholder, which is the department. So we found it's been finalized. We are unable to finalize some of our challenges because they are linked to that act. So this will remain a challenge until that one is been resolved. And as I've already indicated, there's also a declining in jewelry manufacturing industry, but also in general there's a decline in the diamond and gold industry. And we're saying perhaps what we're trying to introduce, the boss that I talk about, generally the trend in the bosses is to stimulate the growth of the industry. Therefore, the establishment of the state boss could help us to reverse the situation that I'm alluding to here of the decline in this industry. Like I'm saying, they are normally created to enhance and stimulate the industry. We hope that if it will just be taken care of nicely and implemented correctly, we think it can reverse the situation. We've seen in other countries, after they've introduced these things happens, because we'll also be linked with them, we'll be a partner with them. So there'll be this movement of commodities, you know, from other countries to South Africa and so on, and we think this will have some spin-offs. Lastly, we have mentioned this also in the past, that there is a complexity in the beneficiation of the batting. When we explained it, perhaps maybe I looked at, we looked at it as a team, that maybe we must explain it more. And those two correctives there are trying to explain what we say by the complexity of platinum beneficiation. And this is what we mean. The platinum beneficiation needs capital intensive, requiring specialized high-tech equipment. That makes it difficult for new entrants, particularly the previously disadvantaged individuals. We stop it, we just say it needs high-tech, so we're not explaining. This makes it difficult for the new entrants. As we deal with transmission, we also want to look at the balances of the past, whatever you do to make a change in there. So this is what we are saying. But also in this industry, develop technologies, which is the technologies that has been developed already that we are talking about, that means high tech, is mostly attached to an intellectual property rights, which also make it difficult for new entrants to access, because certain companies or certain individuals have developed these technologies, and those technologies become their intellectual property rights. And this is what is making a challenge. But having said that, President, at the moment, there is a company which has made a decision to choose South Africa as a country that they want to do further research in the uses, the various uses of platinum, and that is the Mafi refinery. We've been busy dealing with it, and the department is also now having that dealing also with CSIR, and I think the Department of Science and Technology. They are establishing a laboratory here, which will research other uses of platinum than those that we know. And we're seeing from there, maybe there could be, you know, development now where ordinary people could also get into this industry and do further manufacturing. There is a jewelry manufacturing from platinum, but it's not a cheap commodity. For an example, the jewelry made from platinum is very expensive and it's not for ordinary people. Now, even people like myself, you'd rather go for what we call the white gold, which is almost similar to platinum if you look at it, than because we cannot afford platinum. So we are saying it's not necessarily. There are people who are doing jewelry from platinum, but it's for high bars because of the cost that is attached to it. That is it from the remarks, but and from the challenges, but we can remark, Chair President, by saying we continue as an organization to implement Regulation 10-2B for revenue generation and also explore other mechanisms that can be introduced for additional generation of revenue. And this is the basis of why we have taken out inadequate funding every time. And that ends up my presentation. Thank you very much, Chair President.
I should say thank you to you.
You did very well. Okay. Hey, Lester. Can you hear me? Honorable Mafolo. Honorable Lorima, Honorable Nyambi, and Nessa Mensa. Ifasani. You must put the air on that and understand the blood. Prat.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question will come to the presentation. Mine is on organizational structure. Can see you are with the CFO, but I don't see where she fits there. And then you gave us numbers, but you didn't tell us how many females, how many males, days, and what I mean for the role. And then you are reconsidering. And then on that number 17, we talked about the companies, you are exposing companies that have that were issued license to different teams. So are you only working on those companies? What about the officials who have issued those licenses? Thanks.
I'm just interested in finding out some more about your procedures and how they work. How confident are you that you're getting all diamond miners to comply with regulations, particularly the small diamond miners, and particularly those that are in joint ventures with overseas companies, if there are such companies? So are you confident that you're getting them all to obey the regulations? Is there a system that balances diamonds that are mined against diamonds that are exported? So I guess another way of asking that question is there a central registry for all diamonds mined? At what stage do you become aware of their existence? Only when you export them? Or do you become aware of them before then? And then how closely do you work with SARS? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just a comment, Chairperson, on the budget allocation whereby the CFO have tried to identify items that are to be allocated for this project budget. But here, it's just a grant allocation, is not categorized, but I've had time to say some of the things, but it's not so turned down. Also, Chairperson, talked about the expand skill-based workers and specific. I just want to know which category they are referring to when they talk about skills. They are referring to learners out of the scheme or the project or anyone on the board.
Ask the question, but probably to emphasize the point, which was the one. The next was that I mean, please help us. Even if you read your figures, it will be difficult to approve what is in your head. You see, it must be written. The problem I listened very attentive when the CFO was speaking, and I was trying to find what she was speaking on. I just couldn't see it here. It's almost the same thing I talked about in the previous presentation. You can talk on the overall budget in terms of your runoff, in terms of expenditure and so forth. But we must see that this one is, like she was making the presentation, this one is allocated to this, this one is allocated, and this one comes. Otherwise, if it comes like this, you are trying to say, believe what I say. Even if it's not here, believe me on what I'm saying. So I think today that remains one of the most critical issues. I know some of the areas, especially on the challenges. Let me tell you that we'll have to sit down. Your first plan that talks about lack of funding, it's I take the note that it's good. I would have appreciated in the maybe in a similar fashion, like what you read. You see, and you always ask why, what's the difference with the name, the pronunciation of the name, and you have never researched that for me. You said it's a boss. I said ordinarily for me you studied English, first language. I would say it's a boss. And you say it's a boss. And I was asking, is it because when you heard them pronouncing it, they said it's a boss, and then there's no other pronunciation of it. But in a similar way that you are explaining what the boss will be doing, it may not, again I'm saying it may not be now, it might require though, because my fear is that on your second bullet, you may then make reference to a pending legislative amendment. Although we may not show where are those in relation to which one. But I'm saying, is it something that you say we must take note of? Because it may not be easy to just move with the bullet one. It is about transforming the industry, per se, without then understanding what are the areas of focus and what would be the returns for it. But I take note, I'm saying that's why it might be more of a lengthier discussion. I understand it's not for now. For now, you are presenting something for your ATP as well as your budget. So I think we can. But I don't want you tomorrow to come and say, but in that committee, we did raise that there is this kind of intervention that has to be done. When it is being made as a sentence in person, not a point of emphasis. But you can answer.
Chairperson, let me rather start from the last, and I know it was a comment, but also to say thank you very much. I think you can see here we have put on the declining dollar, we have put a summary on the side. And I think what you are saying, pending legislative amendments, we wanted to see how is it actually affecting us. So in future, we will say the details that we have this challenge in our legislation which we must address. But it cannot be addressed because of 1-3. We'll embark on that. I think it was more fun advice what you were giving us. And also the details in the budget. We decided with the CFO after we have concluded this slide that you must say more, which is not on the slide. And I think in future, exactly what you are saying, we'll put it because he said it but it's not there. So we'll put it so that you can see the breakdown as to what is it that we're talking about. And maybe we don't even have to explain. We said take an right in their questions because it will be then speaking for itself. The category of the budget, let me rather talk about the skills development. I'm not sure which member asked it. What the reference to skills development in our structure or in our budget, the breakdown of the budget, we have a responsibility to skill the employees who are supposed to regulate in this. But through the organizations or the industry that we regulate, we also facilitate that they must do other areas of human resource development as required by charter, which means is to issue bursaries and all those things that the charter says is human. We have to facilitate and make sure that they do it. But we, our responsibility inside is to also skill the people that they can do their work properly. But the other areas we achieve through the industry to issue bursaries and all those things that goes with it in terms of what the charter requires. I hope you have not answered it correctly, it will come back. Please see if we can just talk about the category that the ma'am asked about your budget category.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, member. I think I'll just reiterate what the CEO has explained, that taking the breakdown that has been due to, and which the information that can be submitted to the committee as soon as we get back to the office, if available. And I apologize for that. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm going to a question which said how closely you work from Honorable Lauren Stars. It has been a challenge. We have been fighting, and I can rest assured we do have proof. Stars was doing things without us, and these things would necessarily actually embarrass the country, because through customs there were things that were happening that only we can actually say what was happening, and they did things wrong and so on, but we have started that process last year to come together. We might even end up having an MOU as law allows, that certain organizations can have a memorandum of understanding of how to operate. We took an initiative of writing to the commission to ask for that, and he put up a team. So we are still looking for that team. But previously it was not like that. And we saw the cracks and the loopholes, which actually can help the country in actually achieving a lot of revenue from tax, because there's a lot of evasion, as you know, that is going on in this country. So we said, no, there's no way we have to work together. So we are addressing that very, very aggressively. The system of mined diamonds and echo diamonds. Let me just explain by saying the regulation of diamonds, other than our laws, is primarily and entirely been regulated in terms of the Kimberley Processing Regulation, the movement of diamonds. And that every country has got the responsibility to have a distance. When you mine diamonds, we don't regulate the mining of diamonds, we regulate the movement. The department regulates the mine. The company is the producer of mine. They record their diamonds in the registers. When they start moving, being sold, they also have their registers that they must submit to us, that we have produced the list diamonds, we sold this to so and so. And all that has to be recorded. When we do inspections, we do check some of these things. But their registers, they come to us, they tell us the whole thing. Now, any diamonds that need to be exported has to come to the regulator. The law requires that before you can export the diamond, it has to come to the regulator, and the regulator must put it on a tender for minimum of 4 days to see if locally it cannot be bought, particularly for beneficiary purposes. Now, if it's not bought now, then it's bought overseas, then it will go, but obviously you will pay the taxes as determined by the Revenue Act that which are for SAS, but we are regulating them because we are on the face of that discipline. And I think that's how I can just I hope if it doesn't satisfy you, say you just say again. You talk. Okay, thank you very much. The compliance to regulation, it links to what I've actually explained. All producers of diamonds, we also are required also to register with us, that we must know, even if they have a license of the government, that we know that they are dealing in diamonds. So once they start moving, we know they've registered them. They must, number one, irrespective of size, and we know that the country is very big. The first requirement that is every producer, after their production, they must offer it, the whole production, to the state diamond trader, that the state diamond trader can do 10%. That has to be distributed for beneficiation. So that's a requirement. We might have not captured everybody, but for the couple of two, three years back, we have been going out and trying to capture things. There's a system that we are now using the department to link. That one of the requirements is for the people who they give letters. The requirement is that to register automatically, that we don't have to run up with them. So they will have to prove the department before they get the license. We have registered with the regulator that they know about us. So we'll all start there for a time. I hope that also satisfies.
Okay.
I think it's linked with that question is how confident miners are. I think it's linked with the two questions. The children, I think we have covered. I'm not sure whether I've forgotten one. Sorry, how did that pass that? The organizational structure. What was the question? The word was? I'll show you now, just I'm trying to get We have put the structure in terms of programs. We have put this in terms of programs. But what would normally come out very usual is when we report on the annual report. But CFO will be under administration, the program one. We'll just put the number of people there. You have got program number one, which is administration, and you've got program number two, which is diamond set, which also is supposed to have the general manager who are with the CFO. We did not put Muzu there, and the regulatory compliance program, like I said, the new gentleman is the head of that. These programs are headed by general managers, but we did not put the general manager, we just put the number of people there. But as we say, Chief Executive Officer is there after the board. It's just to show that at least this organization has achieved an accounting. So they are there on that program. They are heads of those programs. But we will put that next time. But when we put CFO, then we will have, say for an example, 51 plus CFO. So, but we just put some of the number. Like where we have 20, we'll have that general manager less one, and that number will be 27. We can put that there. It's not a problem. Thanks for advice. The license defaulters, remember, I think you asked what do we do about the officials. There's nothing that means that the defaulters are the people who are not complying to the charter. That transformation must be achieved. So it's the officials that actually are revealing this, who have been put to do this. So it actually applies. One of these days they will ask for bonuses because once we achieve this, but it's through us that we are revealing this. So it doesn't affect officials, they are revealing this. Thank you.
But thanks for the illuminating answers, but I'm afraid there is a good answer, but sometimes another question. So it sounds like with regard to the SARS issue and also with regard to the gap between your records and the DMR's licensing procedures, they have in loopholes. Is there any possibility, and I just like your best guess on this, what kind of revenues may have been lost to the state? What sort of quantities of diamonds could have slipped through all these gaps? So I know that, of course, it's speculation, but I'd be very interested in your informed opinion. And then secondly, I just want to jump back briefly to the course, because I don't really understand how it would be different, maybe just encapsulate this for me briefly, how it would be different from what's already operating in the Diamond Center. Does that make sense?
This was the last one again.
The idea of the bus.
What about it?
How is it different from what's already in existence in South Africa at the Diamond Center?
Okay. Let me start with that one.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm very, very sure. The difference is that the bosses are sort of independent. They are not a regulatory regime. So what is happening now is by doing some of the processes that are happening, like you know, doing the tendering and so on, the terms export and imports, but then you are at the same time a regulatory regime, where some of the things that we want to do better to enhance the trade, we are part of what the law says. So we are not free to can do it to enhance the trade, to stimulate, because the law at current says one, two, three. So separating them, in all those countries that we mentioned, process, the regulatory regime is a boss, which the regulatory regime oversees. The government oversees the boss. But then there's an environment which has been made conducive
by having some of the benefits and those things that actually makes attractive to business, such as incentives, tax incentives and so on. In the boss, you might be allowed to say, you are allowed to take so much money without tax. And you are not allowed, if you operate in this environment, not to pay that. So there are those benefits. So the difference is, at the moment, legislatively, we don't have those because we are at the same time. We are trying to do the trade enhancement, but we are also a regulatory regime. So we are a regulatory player at the same time. But also in the boss, you can introduce other commodities that add value to salary manufacturing. That's why I'm saying we might change today. We are only regulating the diamonds, the precious metals, which is gold and diamonds. There are other gemstones in other countries, because they all call them precious stones. But us, we only refer to diamonds as precious stones. So we can also bring them. And I think when they report, you will hear all the programs when they talk about gemstones, which they are doing in other. There will be this, you know, collaboration. And the figure will become big. That what they are doing eventually will also land or end up in the boss to be further manufactured in Zulam. And I think that's the difference. That's a very difficult question, Honorable Joy. There's many ways. Other than the gaps, here in South Africa, there's a lot of revenue that we might be losing. Looking at the cases that we see in the newspapers, through smuggling and all these rigmaroles that are going. So to just say this gaps, as we all know in every country, they do the best who can, you know, they are the ones that can actually expose people who are actually money evading and money laundering and so on. I can't have a standard of figure to say we think, but we know that there's a big loss. And if we come together, we all start, and maybe be left with that we must be assisted by other law enforcement to end up this case of smuggling and so on.
So
I can't give
a figure. I think for me the point that taken from what you are raising the initial answer of the collaboration between the SARS and the regulator is a question that arises, because I think we're going to have another session with the finance committee on the issue of base erosion and all these terms, you know them, because sometimes they are disputed. I'm taking note. I think for me, amongst other things, in that discussion, there has been too much of SARS. What's the other one? The second. Now, there's a second one that was presenting together with SARS in that joint committee meeting. That's not treasure. But the point is, we never thought of the diamond regulator as having an effective role to play. It therefore, to me, says that work that will be done by SARS in collaboration with the state diamond trade, to some extent, we have to ask a question: how does the committee play an oversight? And how can it help to facilitate? Because if you look what the state demonstrator says, it says it might be bigger than what you see as gaps. In terms of, the regulator, it might be bigger than what you see as the gaps in between. And therefore, we might have to look at much more bigger than what we see as a regulated environment. And say, I was making a joke to say, but the reality is that it would be difficult to say you play a responsible role of being oversight. But on the other side, you may not know how much loss is there. Somewhere we must find an answer in between. And I was going to say, down the line, part of that work that the regulator is doing was so that if we invited them, they must be able to give that answer. Even if not a definite answer, but to say, these are the areas where we could be making losses of revenue. which therefore, in collaboration with SARS, we have reached that an estimated figure is like this. May not be the absolute and correct one, but it's something that is able to give you the extent of the problem. I think if you can, we're not saying you wait, you must wait for SARS, but if you can identify those areas where there are possible and serious loopholes, especially around first around evasions, around areas where there is non-compliance, and around issues that you raise about the gaps that exist in between, so that you can at least have a definite approach. Honorable Lauren?
If I can just make a quick comment, I think it's divided into, in a sense, things that are preventable and things that are not preventable. There's going to be crime of one sort or another. But just as far as your side goes, those areas where you identified gaps and you are not closing them, I mean, I'd be reassured if you can tell me a date by when you know that all the gaps that are possible to plug are plugged. You know, that's leaving aside the criminality and stuff.
Okay. It's a reasonable.
No, it's a reasonable request. Actually, we do have those, and we don't have to wait. We can itemize them and send them to you to say these are the areas that we are worried about that might have these loopholes. We do have that. We can prepare for comment.
Okay. Any other?
Now I'll come back to you. The next, the state demonstrator, whilst they are coming, let me release this. The committee mandated that having sent the correspondence to the having sent the correspondence or waiting for compliance with the correspondence forwarded to the state administrator and receiving their own response with the legal opinion. And having received our legal opinion, the committee mandated that we must interact if possible and try and manage the possible standoff between the committee and see whether these issues cannot be addressed without going through these particular rules, notwithstanding the fact that we still believe there's a committee of all the power to request whatever information that is all needed. We have had a discussion, I think, on the past since the last committee. We have had discussions with the state demonstrator. They have finally agreed to supply us with the information. I can confirm that they have received the information. You said that we received. I must say we had a lengthy discussion yesterday. Besides the preliminary discussion we have had a lengthy discussion yesterday. And they finally agreed that they'll supply the committee with the information. Having supplied this information, in my view, it is not sufficient from what the committee had asked for. I have asked them to add some information because I had to also go back and reconsult with the resolution of the committee. They've confirmed that they will supply that information by Friday. And we said by next week we'll be discussing, and amongst other issues, is that response, which we will then look whether it finally complies for what the committee has asked for. But I can confirm that in terms of the one part that I think this is not in full compliance, and I said where such information is not there or whatever, they should be able to state in footnotes below as a response. I've given what I think are the three key areas that for me I identified in the COVID. I must also say that probably there will be a possible overlap between what they do and what the regulator does, but I would ask members that first let's hear what the answers in totality in compliance from what the committee asked for, and then based on that members can then agree on what then would constitute the way forward based on that answer. But I can say safely for now, I think that issue of some people giving for us is at this stage hopefully a matter that is set aside. When you go for legal opinion, it is just saying someone must think on your behalf and tell you what you should do in picking. So I would say, I'm not saying it off because the community has not said so. But for now, I think there's a common understanding that the information will be supplied. If you go to the community, then you say it is not in full. Honorable Lorimer?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm very pleased to hear that you're making progress, and I look forward to seeing the information provided. I just wanted to flag that we got a very interesting report from our own committee researcher this morning on the state diamond trader. I haven't had time to read it thoroughly, but I submit that on the basis of that report, we may require that the state diamond trader come back to us and discuss the issues again. I don't really feel able to discuss the report that's been given to us in today's session. So I think we might be needing them back quite soon. I just wanted to flag that.
Look, we do have them in our program. The issue would be one. But also, I'm sure when we've disposed of what has been outstanding between us, even if we're not satisfied, it could form part of that, say, what is submitted requires now that you come some help to the community and address those issues. What we can look at probably is whether the date is too close or is too far, but they are on the program of the committee. Okay? This time around, there's just a man are following. Yeah. Okay. You have your time. You can start. At least I've eliminated one part of you. So you can start, and I know you'll be as efficient as others before you have been. Thank you very much.
You an introduction. We are.
There's one thing is that this mic is actually quite well.
I've turned the mic, Chair. But Chair, just in the interest of time, we would just like to thank you very much for the overview that you have given. We undertake to comply with any request that the committee may have after going through the information that has been supplied. And we thank you for the future opportunity to clarify any matter that arises from the Chair, the king on my left is very well known to this committee, including myself. You people that we are bringing in, just in case there was a thought that the state diamond trader is doing a reverse gender discrimination, we wanted to introduce two fellow board members. On my immediate right is Mr. Achi Sabo, who chairs our Maritime Information Committee. And Mr. Inkes Gundwala is the chair of our Audit and Risk Committee. On my left is the CFO, and our legal counsel, Novice Sibeko. We're presenting this today in the context of a very, very difficult diamond market. And I think to say the least, we can basically say through our observation of the past few months that this industry is facing headwinds that are borne by the pricing signals of especially the polished products. this has been the prices that the producers are asking for their rock. We continue to succumb to a funding model that the committee is well aware is self-generated by the state demonstrator through credit lines that we get from the IDC. The performance of the market will then therefore always be a liquidity risk for the state demonstrator, especially when you look at our trade model where to sell the diamonds to these particular clients, the run-of-mine model which we have indicated to this community will always pose a challenge. So the selection of diamonds, leaving the state of Montreal with diamonds that they cannot sell to the specific customers, will become a problem, particularly when you look at the performance of the market in this particular context. But our role doesn't change, and whatever challenges have been thrown in the door of the state of Montreal, we continue to pursue being a catalyst for the transformation of the diamond beneficiation industry in South Africa. But that constantly requires the state diamond trader to ensure a suitable, equitable access of rough diamonds to especially the historically disadvantaged South Africans. It's an ongoing challenge because the run-of-mine policy, which we have discussed in the Pacific Committee, does pose a risk as far as that is concerned. The so-called previously disadvantaged Africans, they could continue to emerge and to develop, but also to have their own businesses develop in a sustainable way in order to, in future, compete in a particular sector. So we have to carry on with our interventions. Our goal has got to continue to be the promotion of the diamonds and the industry itself to South Africa, and to create a much better understanding of the role of the state diamond trader. We have to continue to seek opportunities for our mining clients to get exposure to international markets so that we can expand their own trade and their own products in that regard. But our funding framework continues to play an important role in our own sustainability as an entity. Otherwise, we run the risk of not being able to fulfill the government imperative of transforming the diamond industry. So we did at a current level on very, very low, if not a zero base as far as the funding is concerned. But we continue to ensure that we grow our sustainability through prudent financial management that enables us to continue being a good client to our funders, repaying every cent of what we owe, and expand, therefore, our loan facility to enable us to trade and pursue the mandate. And lastly, I may not have time to make this conclusion. In order for us to fully explain some of the challenges we have, it will be our privilege to host the committee, not only to the state diamond trader, but also to the prisons, because it is in that environment that we can spend more time going through and sharing with the honorable members, our activities as well as be prepared in a manner that is optimal to explain any issues that members may have. I'd like to now hand over to the Chief Executive, Ms. Kuchin Glasser, to continue the presentation for the afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon to the Chairperson and honorable members. And thank you for the introduction by the Chairperson. There will be some repeats in terms of what I'm going to be saying, as the chairman has done a high-level summary of some of the things. But I want to start by saying that our presentation is broadly divided into four. We have the highlights, we have the markets report, then we have our annual performance plan, and the last part being the budget, the money part. In terms of the highlights, we just want to say what we see coming towards us in the coming year. Obviously, the issue of diamond markets and their performance at this point in time, not only locally but globally, is uppermost in our minds. Even when we sat down with the board to plan for this year as well as the entire MTSF period, the markets were not like this. And so we are faced with something that some commentators are like, it's more like the, you know, time when we were at a sort of tail end of the last recession 2007-8, because we've just seen a decline the previous quarter, well, the third quarter of the financial year, the last quarter. So things are not looking that well in the diamond industry. And one of the things that you can look at in terms of that is when some parts of the diamonds, you know, the rough diamonds end up costing more or having higher values than their counterparts, but in polished. And you can see that things are not going well. Some correction is happening in the market. But again, I mean, we know that if you're working with minerals, their performance is really cyclical. They'll go down, come up, but sometimes when they go down for an extended period of time, the impact can be dire. But in spite of that, we are still, you know, we still have plans and we have plans to continue promoting the industry and diamonds throughout the country. And we have taken, the route of working with provincial governments or working in provinces to make sure that we are able to reach as many corners of our country as possible. The other thing that we're going to be doing, which is quite a big issue this year, is us hosting a diamond endeavor, where we'll have local players as well as international players in a limited way, but mostly local players, talking about diamonds, because we still want to be, you know, the heartbeat of diamond beneficiation in the continent, despite all the challenges, especially facing producing nations. We still are planning on employing and training young people in this country, and you will see towards the end of my presentation how we're going to do that. But we're excited about it, you know, looking at the challenges that our young people face, you know, in terms of problems there being no jobs or economic activities for them. As far as the first highlight is concerned, we've taken quite a lot of time and we have quite a number of slides that talk to the diamond market. The first slide is taking us back. It's an index and we took the slide, you know, from IDEC Online, IDEC being one of the international publications on diamonds and diamond jewelry. And it indicates a situation of real decline. You know, this is an index, so these are, you know, figures just because of the index and a number of inputs have been used to get that by them, the people who come up with this index online. But basically it indicates that, you know, apart from the peak, you know, in prices and values in July 2011, the slide down has been seen to a point where we say they are saying that globally, therefore, there is a 16% decline in the Polish diamond price index. And so this, because of the slowing consumer demand for diamond jewelry, we know that, you know, consumers are quite cautious, and we've seen it, and we saw it even in December. And when we look at the numbers, and we compare year on year, which in, you know, for instance, January 2014 and January 2015, it has just gone down, the value of the prices has gone down in Polish, you know, by about 7%. The next slide is also, you know, a presentation of what I've just said, which is an anomaly in the market where you find that rough prices end up on average being higher than Polish prices. I mean, in Polish there's been so many other additions, you know, costs and other inputs but at the same time, at the point of sales, then you find that there is that anomaly, which is something that still requires, you know, a change, a correction. Even at the last Hong Kong show, which is one of the biggest shows on, you know, in the world, there was real subdued, you know, selling, and the market was still not, it didn't get any energy from the show. Instead, you know, there's quite a lot of discounting in prices that people were able to sell it at the show. The next slide is based on a report that was done by Bain, you know, even Bain and Company in 2011, which indicates, you know, margins that are really possible within the diamond pipeline. And you can see that probably the lion's share is with the mining companies, and the second one being with the retailers. But when you look at where the space where we pay, the margins are between 1 and 5% depending on where exactly you are within that. So the people that we're dealing with, the companies that are buying from us, are therefore space that 2 to 5%, and these are really depressed markets, and so, I mean, margins. These are margins that are quite low, and as the market gets under so much pressure, these numbers go even further down. Some of the reasons for, you know, the market to be where it is, and then you are not able to get good sales numbers on diamond jewelry in the U.S., you know, and they actually went down because, you know, prices went down on both rough and polished, you know. In December, we were hoping that with Thanksgiving having just happened and then Christmas and preparations for New Year, that there would be changes, but nothing happened. Instead, there were negative margins, as a collective now when the numbers were put together. As well as, you know, even though that we may say that, you know, we were expecting high numbers because of those negative numbers in some of the categories of diamond jewelry, we saw that the growth was really very, very modest. And then in the East, particularly in China, the sales were even lower than had been expected. I've spoken about the Hong Kong show. And now I'm saying with this market, you know, information, that we are under pressure, not only us as a state diamond trader, but the industry as a whole. And so this is something that South Africa needs to look into as well, and we're hoping, I mean, we can't say that the diamond industry is therefore where things are going to be discussed, because it was not thought of and conceived as a result of what the market was doing, but some of the things that will then get into it. The forecast for 2015 is still not looking good. You may find that some people are looking at, you know, the second half of the year, saying that things might just become better. But at the same time, sometimes it just depends on who's speaking. If it is the peers maybe, or a mining company, they may be looking at it differently to manufacturers, just because of where each of those players would be in the pipeline. But there are other things that are happening within the market as well. You know, defaults on debt, you know, within the industry are also, you know, immediately a big company, you know, defaults. That sends shivers down the industry, and people start feeling like, what is it? How much are we supposed to pay for what? And that panic then sets everything in motion, that, you know, people never know how much to pay for stone, and then they want a bigger discount, and that has also its own ripple effect on the, you know, on the people who are within the pipeline. And we know that by the end of the calendar year last year, it was said that there was quite a lot of diamonds in the pipeline because they were just not getting out, you know, in the end, you know, every team end. And so that meant that in any case, whatever we had hoped for, which is a normal thing, that around January or the first quarter of any calendar year, that is stocking up time as well, that stocking up was not happening as anticipated. And that, you know, means that there are some changes that are going to take place. And when you read and see some of the articles about other producing countries and see how they are intending to contain production, that, you know, starts to hit home, that things are really not looking that well. And so maybe some strategies or some other interventions are going to be warranted, and, you know, producing nations will probably start doing that, and because their beneficiation attempts are being affected negatively, you know, by this gloomy market that we're experiencing at the moment. And we've heard and read that there are some protectionists, and, you know, within the beneficiation sector, even across the border. I have indicated that we are not immune as a country and as an industry. You know, we are affected by this, and we see how large manufacturers are then performing, what they are doing in trying to protect their balance sheets and trying to protect their businesses and their operations, and that has an impact further down us, because then some of them end up not even buying from us. They don't trust some producers, and if you are selling to them goods from a particular producer, this is another success, because of the way that they produce sells, then the larger producer, the larger manufacturer just tell us in our faces that they will not touch those goods because they do not trust the prices that are coming from those producers. But I still see quite a number of even, you know, international players coming to buy grass in this country. And maybe that's one of the pressures that we're going to end up having, that, you know, as a producing nation, they want to put us under immense pressure as well over time. It doesn't help us as well that we are dealing in a run-of-mine model as a state-down trader. And that continues to challenge us. And that continues to mean that each time we buy, we need to find good ways of selling the run-of-mine. As you might recall, honorable members, that I've said this before in this house, that this country's manufacturers only want to cut and polish a specific sector within the whole cross-section of rough diamonds that are mined in this country. But the state diamond trader has got to buy the entire run of mine, you know, the whole cross-section in terms of the law. And that has got its very many problems for the state diamond trader. That means that, you know, due to some of these concerns that I've mentioned, we may not be able to buy from the country's biggest producers. And I'm going to point out, you know, to the chairperson and honorable members here that because of the model that we have in state diamond trade, we rely heavily on moving volumes. If we don't have volumes, our model gets affected immediately by what's going on outside. I can tell you that we have not bought from the largest producer in 50 years a number of times. And that has got significant implications for a small entity like a state diamond trader. And we're seeing that, and it means that we need to do something. Because now, between the time of planning and the time now of the start of the financial year, there is this period of time which has been affected by this downturn in the market. And so things are no longer aligned. We need to find some alignment somewhere. And when the board meets later this month, they will discuss that matter so that they can assist management in addressing the issues of budget realignment and maybe even strategy realignment if it comes to that. But that will be done by the board and in consultation with the shareholder in terms of the shareholder compact that exists between the parties. Notwithstanding all of these challenges and also the fact that we have a plan and we have sat down and we have laid our minds at the time of planning, we still have interventions to carry on with, and we are going to carry on with them. And the beauty about doing some of the work that we're doing is that we're empowering our own citizens as a country. You know, but at the same time, as a company, as an entity, we take the route of working with partners, both at state level and at the private sector level. And it's actually quite amazing how people are prepared to work together and to work with us, because they can see probably that, you know, we know what we're doing. And so it has been good to pull together the partners. Even for the diamond endeavor, we got quite a lot of excitement that we've done it on the ground, because people feel that it's really time that the diamond has to sit down and talk. Some of these interventions include facilitation of skills development. We continue to train and to facilitate training for our fault lines, particularly as HDSA lines. We continue to facilitate training for them. And we will continue to do that. We've done some last year where some of these partners came at no cost to the state diamond trader to then offer training to HDSA clients, because the need is out there, and they can see from our proposals to them that we want to assist to grow industry. And so we're doing that, and the new entrants as well, but at the same time, we're looking at employing youth with disabilities into our own program as an entity, because the aim is that we employ them after that training. That, you know, we'll get into that one when I get to the last, to the third part of the presentation, which I'm getting into now. The next slide, Chairperson, is linking the national outcomes and DMR outcomes and programs, you know, with what we're doing as a state demonstrator. At the end of the day, we want to have a sustainable, growing, and transformed diamond beneficiation industry, and that will link, you know, right back to the national outcome. And we think, we sat down and looked at this, and we think that there is alignment, although sometimes alignment is not obvious until you read the content of what that outcome or that progress is about. We have three strategic objectives. The first one being that of contributing to the growth of the local diamond beneficiation industry. And under this one, we have various activities which have targets and outcomes and impact, as have been, you know, tabled in Parliament, and there's a whole, you know, cross-section for those targets. I say for quarterly performance as well as annual performance, and I am hoping that the honourable members have had sight of that table's document. But we are implementing our marketing strategy. If the honourable members might recall, when we were here in one of the previous occasions, we talked about coming up with a marketing strategy and taking that route instead of just focusing on growing the state diamond trader, but saying there is more that we need to do in terms of the law to as an entity. And we said that we'll come up with this marketing strategy, therefore. And now that strategy, we've had prioritization of the pillars that are in there, and we're going ahead with that. And one of these is leading us to this diamond index, which we're looking forward to. And this diamond endeavor is going to be held at the same time as well, which is an annual jewelry show in this country. But we're combining our efforts with the jewelry people and through the jewelry council to then do that together, because it just makes sense, and we can then say something collaboratively as these related industries. And so we continue to establish new partnerships and even for the expansion of Jewelers, and they received our idea with warm hands and hands. Now Jewelers is ready to expand it because of the request from the state diamond trader, because otherwise we were feeling like it was losing its sparkle, and we need to bring it back. And we are quite excited as the committee that's preparing for Jewelers 2015. We will continue as well to promote access to to local and international markets for our clients. And we've done that before, and particularly the international one. We've gone to the show in Hong Kong, and we've seen growth, you know, for the past two occasions that we went, with the number going up. And we're doing it again. This is another partnership that we have with the Department of Trade and Industry. And so now South Africa has this national pavilion at the Hong Kong show, which is a really beautiful thing to see as you walk in and you see your country's name up on the board and on, you know, in that world stage. It really is something that makes you feel proud to be South African. I've spoken about Duelex and then the Hong Kong shows, and now the one that's coming in September that we're going to be doing. And then the provincial promotional visits. These are our activities here in the country, as I have pointed out, and we already have provinces that are that we have invited to now go to as the year has just begun. Even before the end of this month, we have done two in the province of Limpopo, together with the provincial government. Strategic objective number two, increase sales of our diamonds HDSA beneficiators. We want to see the growth of HDSA beneficiators. We are going to continue implement our sales strategy, which has a particular focus on HDSAs. And because we believe that we need to ensure that we level the playing field as much as we can so that they can come in. We allocate to them, they're able to buy, and they can grow as much as they can. And we need to go out to speak to funding agencies in this country to assist them to try and facilitate funding for small players, new entrants, and HDSAs. And so we are quite busy in trying to facilitate such funding and even marketing and training for them. So we want to establish SMMEs. We continue with that, and you know, we are already in a process now with this one, five young people that have started their training as SMMEs, these small enterprises, but they're still in training, so they're not yet called, you know, businesses, because they're still in training. We'll see what happens by the end of next year. And as has also been stated by the regulator, there are issues pertaining to the amendments we want to identify, and we have set, you know, plans in motion to look at what amendments would make life of the local industry better through the state diamond trader. So we're looking at that as well. The last strategic objective is that of contributing towards youth skills development. And on that we have two main areas of focus. The one is what I've mentioned, that of recruiting youth with disabilities, and we see ourselves recruiting four by the end of this financial year and getting them into the training program. And this training program, from our experience, we know that it runs for 2 to 3 years. And we are going to do that, and our target is to at least have 75% of them employed. So we're hoping for a 3-quarter success around that, unless we are able to employ all of them. And then we want to, you know, do the leadership program to increase knowledge and, you know, educate and train young people about the diamond industry, and therefore potentially get them to participate in SME programs for new entrants and just to get into this industry and assist us to grow this industry and have quite a lot of local, you know, participants and new participants in it. Chairperson, with your permission, I'm going to ask that the CFO take us through the budget and the summary at the point.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, honorable members, and thank you, CEO. Give a summary of our budget for 2015-16. As it has already been laid, the foundation in which the budget was conceived, to say the market was not where it is right now. So at the time of doing budget, we had projected that the entity was able to record sales to an amount of 574 million. The projected cost of sales for that, we had put it at 552 million, and consequently would have made a gross margin of 32 million for the year. And at the time of budgeting, we indeed had in the sad situation that we would have sold all the stock, and the year would have been started at zero balance. However, as things have already been explained in terms of the market conditions, we have closed with a stock of 3.8 million. And moving ahead with the previous projections, we had then set the earnings before interest and tax at 1.6 million, which would have been that was covered overhead, which we projected to be 20.5 million. I'm going to give the detail when we look at the table of our overhead. And as a result, we would have then generated about 2.9 million after factoring the interest that we earned from our investment and the expenses incurred from the use of the revolving credit facility. And the CEO has already mentioned that we probably need to have a look at doing the budget as well as the APT, and we will obviously seek guidance from our shareholder in that regard. We have given indication of the numbers that we're projecting for the year, and the detail that I wanted to give was at the overhead. The overheads are mainly contributed by salaries at 10.5 million. The leases is the next item, which is sitting at 638 million. That would be, I don't know which kind of a building was rented, sorry, members, but it's just over 638,000 for the year. And then the computer and other related expenses would be 551,000. The travel, as we have the programs which involve the promotion of the industry as well as allowing our clients to have access to the market, including local and overseas travel. The cost of traveling is projected at 1.8 million. And then the fees in terms of the audits that are conducted, both external and internal auditors, together with the audit and board fees, are projected at 1.7 million. And then the other costs which are meant to run the activities of the entity on a day-to-day basis are projected at 5.1 million. Then it already indicated that we then have investments which we generate income from and interest expenses from the loans that we exercise with the revolving credit facility. The profit before taxation is projected at 2.9, which is the same as the net profit. The entity is exempt from any taxes. That was the end of the presentation.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Hello, members. Why are you crying, Honorable Matra? Why are you crying?
No, I'm not crying.
That's why you're crying.
No, I'm not crying. Share something.
Any questions, honorable members? Honorable Larima? Honorable Mafon? Oh, you're crying too.
Okay.
Honorable Larima?
I start the comment. I know this is a difficult business. I know the times may be tough.
But if you look at the commercial mining sector, De Beers is responsible for the bulk of Anglo-American's profits. They did it well. So it's not affecting everybody for some reason. Just go over piecely again the exact aims of the diamond and dollar. I mean, just what exactly do you expect to come out of this? And what is it going to cost you to stage it? Is it a significant cost? Please tell us. You talked about trainees and also these ends overseas. You've taken some of them overseas. I believe you've funded various people in the industry, possibly their trainees to go overseas. Can you tell me who you've taken overseas? How you decided who would go overseas and what it costs? Thank you.
Thank you. To your comment on the Honorable Lorimer, indeed, the PS is the best performer within the end table. We are aware of that, and they are actually putting us all under pressure. They are putting us all under pressure. And when you read the IREX, for instance, of March this year, it will indicate to you that they had about 3% of boxes declined, you know, as they go along in their price order system, because people are just under pressure. The manufacturers are under severe pressure throughout the world. Even the International Diamond Manufacturers Association chairperson or president, who is based in Russia, recently wrote an article about how much the manufacturers are under pressure. So not only this country, but globally, the manufacturers are under severe pressure. So it means that that base study of 2011, which indicated a lion's share of the margin goes to the producers, that is still persisting with them today. But I'm not able to say more than that on that, Honorable Lorimer. The diamond endeavor, we want to be talking. We want to get talking. The industry last year really had a big meeting in year 2000. Which was organized by private sector players, and they spoke. And at this point in time, there are issues that are coming from government, especially, that are not happening. Transformation is not happening in the industry. That is one of the things that we'll be talking about. We want to also know where we're taking this industry in the coming years. You know, and we also want to know how do we get the, you know, young South Africans, you know, all, of all persuasions to get into this industry. We want, you know, the industry to speak and to tell us, and we're all consulting one another with, you know, through the other, to get to where we can say the industry is coming of age again. I know that it's an old industry, but they are various things. But the thing, at this point in time, we're saying that we want to be the heartbeat of diamond beneficiation in Africa. You know, now in order for us to get there, we need to resolve a number of things that are happening locally in this country, you know, and to see where we can get funding for the new players. How are we going to augment their skill, etc. The cost is actually not as we thought it might. The major cost will well be, you know, those of getting the venue and sorting that one out. It's a one-day meeting. It doesn't even have a dinner because we are working together with the Jewelry Council on Jewelers, and so they have a color dinner. So we're piggybacking on other partners quite a lot. So they've entered quite a lot of funding that, you know, because we've approached quite a number of partners, including some commercial banking institutions as well, to work with us on this. I can't tell you the full amount at this point in time, Honorable Lorena, but I know to your question. In terms of trainees, yes, indeed, we are training young people, and our own that we have and that we're going to employ. I didn't say the next part of the question, or it was all together, was about taking people overseas. We're taking players overseas, and, you know, industry players. Luckily, the process of funding this is being done by our partner, the Department of Trade and Industry. So they just issue an application and inform everyone in the country who is in the sector to apply, and they apply, and they assess the application themselves as the DTI, and then they inform us, these are the people that we have assessed, and they are complying, and do you have your clients among them? And we say yes, and we take the people there. You know, so we pay zero for the people that are going there. Thank you.
Okay.
The latter part is what you must prepare for. The invitation will be sent. And I think that invitation should not only go to the state diamond, trade. I think the regulator too, on the issues of beneficiation. It was in the mail, that's the issue that will be wanting to focus on. We hope we won't be disrupting your Indaba. You say you are preparing for the Indaba. But look, I know your suggestion, although it's a coward one, very cowardly put. Please, when you come, as you are going to be invited and to present, give us a perspective of the approach on funding. Because I heard, just as you were crying, you're not being funded, you might need later for government. No, you must then say, amongst other issues, to just be honest, there's been a drop in terms of what you put as targets. So you don't want to deal with an entity that is reflecting the depreciation instead of appreciation. They must be able to say, in terms of those interventions, financials, they come in, this is how we think it will assist us to uplift the industry where we are in. So I can be prepared. Don't be afraid. You can't tell me you are sitting in an industry where there is no resistance. What form of resistance that you are dealing with is the obstacles that you are having. Include the legislative framework. Is it very conducive to make you be able to perform to the effective level? And that's saying when you come, when we deal with those issues, we will really expect that you go to that extent. The point that Honorable Lorimer is raising, I know it may sound, I take point, but one of the things, you must be honest, you are not getting money from the state, it's okay, but the state MDT, they are treating you like they only say prodigal son. The fact is, no, I'm saying they are treating you like a prodigal son when you are not even a prodigal daughter. The point I'm raising is that it may leave some impression. I hope that's not the impression. I know you may not have been coming prepared to account on that aspect. But it might be very dangerous in a meeting to say, well, I don't know what is the budget for the event or how much the event. It might be, I'm saying, even if you get, it might be what is called a projected budget for the event. You may not have an interest now, but also to understand that you don't overcommit yourself. Even from those commitments from commercial building industry. Sometimes it's very easy when you start something, everyone shows an interest, but as things are coming in, people are supposed to commit to what they've planned, you then realize that you are on your own. But I'm just saying, if that issue for me, it mainly is going to become, I understand also the point that you have raised, that I'm worried that you're even telling us about the galactic universe you did not prevent. You may think that you are invited in the galactic. But the point is that finally the responsibility that we have is to see you not just standing on your own, but growing beyond what you are. So I think at that stage there will be a lot of that work that is going to be done in relation to that. On that note, I think let's release you. Until we see you again, hopefully without exchanging papers. Okay. Next one.
Councillor Josiah. Oh, come in there.
So we have to
good afternoon, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. H. Ngomezu is not even prepared to be given the platform. Continue, Ngomezu. I can work with people like you.
Yeah.
And thank you, you are on your own.
Thank you for awarding us the privilege of doing the presentation today. But unfortunately, I'm on my own. Because when I became aware that there's a possibility that the committee's agenda might be reviewed, my chairperson wanted to be with me on Friday. When I informed her, unfortunately, it's a lady by the way. Unfortunately, she was unavailable to be able to be here on time today, advocating the Mabatini chair. The apologies, I think. Having said that, the presentation today is not, I wouldn't say it's a full presentation, but it's a summary of the shareholder compact that was tabled here in Parliament at month's end. So I'm just doing a summary of what is here in order to jog the memory of the members rather than re-educating what is in the document. However, just to mention what is in the document. The document is a four-part document. That is the shareholder compact or the annual performance report. The first part of the four parts of the document is on agreed principles, where we talk about the vision of MINDEC and the legislative framework that guides us in what we're doing. And the second part of it is the programs, all the programs that we are doing. And the third part of it is actually the scorecard of saying, what is it that we're going to do in 2016 and when do we intend achieving it as such? And the last part is the part of appendices, which consists of things like your health and safety in the institutions and things like that. Having said that, Chair, in this presentation, the first thing that I'll start up with, I'll just do a bit of a summary and then go into details. When starting with the summary, I think it's critical to remind the members of the core business of MINTEC. The core business of MINTEC is to research and develop efficient mineral processing technologies and value-added products. And everything that we have at MINTEC is centered around that first core objective. To an extent that 50% of our work and 50% of our finances are concentrated on that core function of MINTEC. And then the other two core functions of MINTEC are to promote the mineral-based economies of rural marginalized communities. There, we actually is what we do, uplift communities. And during the years, we changed a bit of our focus. Our focus is mainly now on developing the youth. I'll come back to it. It's exactly what we're going to do going forward in developing the youth in rural and marginalized communities. And the last core business of MINTEC is to develop our people, the people that work for MINTEC. And then there are these two other core things that we're supposed to do, whether we like it or not. Obviously, as an institution, spend only 20% of that. The first one is uphold good governance of the institution. That is trying to help the Auditor General that has less work when he arrives at MINTEC. We spend about 15% of our work there. And when it comes to advertising of MINTEC, which is enhanced MINTEC visibility and capability of the institution, is to make people to know who's MINTEC, what is it that MINTEC is doing. There we spend about 5% of our time and finances. Having said that, Chair, I would just like, just to go through quickly through this slide. This slide only shows where MINTEC operates. What is it that we do in which part of the world? It's just to remind the members that we are a world
a renowned institution, and not only a South African institution, we've got an influence with over. And I'd like to share that I'll start by just doing a quick summary. In my quick summary, the major thing I want to show the members is the problems that we have. I wouldn't call them challenges. I'm starting to call them problems because they've been there for quite some time. If you look at the green bar, which is written there as the other revenue, that is our commercial revenue. Because the money that we generate on our own from the state resources that we get, we develop projects and we partner with other people and we make money out of these people. If you look at it, since 2009, we've dropped. So we had our peak in 2009. Since then, our commercial revenue is continuously dropping. And we predict that it could still continue dropping even going further. But we have been helped by the defense vote, the state grant. The state grant from 2013 started increasing. But that increase is not the normal increase that you have. That increase is project-based. You'll see it at the end of my presentation again. When I concentrate on the forecast, you'll see what's happening with the forecast. But I just want to touch it over now to sensitize you that we have financial problem going forward. We don't have it currently, but we suspect going forward it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher, and we think we're going to have it a problem going forward. The other issue that I would like to raise now up front is it's a problem that we have on the numbers of women in the institution. And we're not sitting idle and not looking into it. The chair earlier on was saying, how can you expect this intervention to be done by men? I'll come back to it towards the end of my presentation to clarify that in a way as to what is it further that MINTEC is going to do, not in 3 years' time, but by the end of the coming month. If you look at the age differential at MINTEC, you can see that, I mean, on the right hand side of that slide, you've got a set of slide which is zero. At the right hand side of the slide, it gives you an indication of the number of women at MINTEC, and the left hand side gives you the number of maids in the institution. If you can look at the age 25-29, that's where you have in majority women compared to men. That doesn't happen automatically. It happened because of the interventions that MINTEC is doing. The interventions that we had was to increase the number of bursaries that we offer to women compared to men. And we absorbed, our other strategy is that every person that is given a bursary, full-time bursary at MINTEC is going to be above, it's going to have a job. Once we start seeing that we don't have position, we decrease the number of bursars. Because we want to get to a stage where we kill somebody, give somebody a bursar, and at the end of the bursar we say, sorry, we don't have a job for you. Because that's more dangerous. So you can see the interventions that we have, that the interventions at the age of 25-29, which is mainly the new entrances that we take, is mainly the females. And the average age of employees that we take is 38 years. Which we feel is a good average year. Because how we measure it, we say a candidate, in general, people in general, those people at that age of 38 are people who have got a master's degree and who have worked for more than 8 years. Between 8 and 10 years at MINTEC we've worked. In the industry we operate, people don't look at a young person who's got an experience of 3 or 4 years. They say knows nothing. But a person with an experience of about 7 years, they start listening to what that person is saying. So the average age that we have is quite a good average age because it means the average age of people that MINTEC are people who are respected in the industry, who know who can carry the institution without other older folks who are still there. So we will be leaving the institution in good hands going forward, Honorable Chair and members. Coming back to the details, this is what I call the upper echelon of people who are employed at MINTEC. These are management levels at MINTEC. And I'm happy to announce that with this management structure at MINTEC, it consists of 76.2% of designated people. Okay? And it's very rare at institutions like ours to have a total of 76% of people who are designated. Meaning there that white males that are there is only 23.8%, which is very rare at this level in most of the institutions. The unfortunate part that we have had, and we're busy on it, is that the female counterparts who are here at the upper echelon of the institution is only 26.6%. It's too little. Okay? Our target is 46% and we'll get to the 46%. But what is really gratifying to me when you look at these people who are here is that at least 8% of them, I call them homegrown people, are people who got into this position not being
taken from any other institution, but being promoted within Vinted. That is something that is very gratifying, because it's something that shows everybody in the institution that if I stay with the institution, I will end up being a general manager or I'll end up being a manager. For example, we've got a person there on the right-hand side, right at the right-hand side there, Alan McKenzie. He came to Vinted as a student, as a bursar of Vinted. And today he has reached a level of a general manager at Vinted. You have the second guy from the bottom on the right-hand side there, who's the manager, Bernard George, who's the manager of the Mineral Processing Division. He also arrived at Vinted as a bursar. Today he's the manager. It's name of them. I mean, I can give you again another example. On the left-hand side, the bottom guy there, the left-hand side, and the second and the third guy from the left-hand side there is also a homegrown person who came in the bursary scheme of Vinted. So what we are trying to do is that we develop our own people for them to occupy the best position in the institution. We don't like to import other skills from somewhere else. It takes us time to be able to get to the numbers that we want, but at least we got 76% of the designated people, most of them from within our institution. Having given that summary, Chair, now I'll move to a bit of a delay into the different programs. The first program I'm going to talk about is the business development program. The business development program is an overarching type of a program at Vinted that gives us a general sense of what is happening in the industry, which are the best places to attract as an institution going forward. And they've given us this graph, for example. This is a graph that is showing how the major mining companies have cut on exploration. And we all know that exploration is what generates what we do in the mining sector. You can see that the maximum that we had was in October 2011. That there's a decline. Compared from around 2011 to where we were in 2014 June, the drop of about 70% in the activity that is happening in the exploration in the industry. And how do we respond as an institution? We've started to shift our cultural emphasis to existing mine operational improvements. Because the previous graph showing us that from exploration side is increasing, so there are going to be lesser and lesser new businesses that are coming to us going forward. What is it that we do as an institution? We change our focus. We look at how we can have the mining companies in developing new projects within what they're doing. We're trying to develop new technologies for new resource opportunities, looking at things like your Springbok flat, coal which has uranium as well, and see how it can be treated. And we also focus on strategic areas of energy. How can we conserve energy? How can we use less water? Because those are the critical things going forward that we're looking at as an institution. The division itself, the business, business development division, as I said earlier, it's just a commercial support to other music divisions. It's overarching the division, but it's got another small division within it, which is called NESU, which does the intelligence of the mineral industry to know where we are. And they also manage the IT system of Vinted, and are coordinating the marketing of Vinted. And also, the part of it is the division that is looking at support to the Department of Mineral Resources on the rehabilitation program. On the rehabilitation program itself, we are targeting to complete four sites in 2050-60, which are sites in Limpopo and KZN mainly. And if the members could remember very well, this is the last year of the 3-year second cycle that we have for rehabilitation. However, there will be projects that will overflow to the following year that we won't be able to complete this year during the 2015 financial year, which will complete in 2016-17, still utilizing the current funding that is there. As this graph is actually showing. It's showing from the top, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 projects that will finish, and however, we estimate that we'll have another 5 projects that will go on to the following year. But I think what is critical with this slide is to try to make it clear to the members that the rehabilitation program, it's not only the construction that is happening in the field. It starts with the planning. When I'm told that there's a site in such an area that you need to go and rehabilitate, you need to plan for it, go do site visits to see exactly where it is, talk with the local communities so that they don't see us as invading their space, and then do a detailed design, and then do the tendering of the project, and then it's then that goes far. So it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight. It's a process, and it depends on the size of the project. The larger the project is, as a member saw, the OCLA project, the more time is taken in order to do the design and show who and all the interested parties how the place is going to look like when complete during the realization. I'm done with the first program change, then I'll come now to the second program, which is the technology program. The technology program is the beginning now of the core business of MISEF. We've got the technology program together with the R&D program, which are at the core business of MISEF. With the technology program chair, I'll start the sub-main pilot plant. I think that most of the members were there. Unfortunately, I was off sick, so I can't remember what was there and was not there. But I was made to understand that the members who were there really appreciated what was doing. Here, we're trying to come up with methodologies of purifying acid mine water.
Okay.
We've done this in the past. We've been able to purify water. Even now, we've been able to purify water again. However, the main thing now is to try to reduce the cost of doing. Because it won't help us in coming up with a method and stop there that is costlier than rainwater or the ordinary water that you get from the air. We're trying to compete with the water that we're getting in the air. When the members are there, understand, they're showing that you can get in water. Now, this is what we are doing with this program, is to try and minimize the amount of chemicals that we use to purify the water. Because the chemicals that we are using are expensive. So we're trying to do a recirculation. That is, try to utilize the chemicals that are there, that we're utilizing. Try to use them several times in order to be able to reduce cost. That is what we're doing, and we think we'll be able to finish that around June of this financial year. However, as well as MINTEC, there are other divisions at MINTEC which are working on water, just to check how do you remove other impurities in water. So after June, when we know how much acid or how much chemicals are we using, we will also compare that with other technologies that we've developed at MINTEC in order for us to try and have the best type of situation. I would also like to remind the members that this type of work, we're not doing it alone. We're doing it with an international water utility company called Veolia. So they are affecting water. Our intention is that when we work with a company that is involved with water, the uptake will be easier for other people to utilize the system, and the knowledge that they also have will also help us in developing what we are doing. The next project that we have that members have heard several times about it, is the refinery that we've developed at DTEC on the refinery. We've completed developing it. Currently, we're looking at different businesses that can utilize the refinery. Unfortunately, the market is depressed, but we're hopeful that we will be able to get individual companies utilizing the facility. When we developed the facility, the aim of developing the facility was to make this a central refinery for the SADC region. We're looking at operations in Malawi and areas like that to bring their material at MINTEC for us to do the refining for them. We're still hopeful that when the industry becomes better, that facility will be utilized. The next program that I would like to delve into is what we call urban mining. Urban mining is treatment of copper, electronic waste that we get. And we did treat first-class material and were able to produce things like rings. However, going forward, we will try to get more material that we can treat and also do a real study to find out as to the products that we make, is it possible for us to be able to use them, for example, as rings. Because if you produce a ring, for example, you cannot just give a ring to a person from a material and say, wait, what if you react to it and things like that. So those are the type of the studies that we'll be looking at the program. As a result of this project that we have started, we've decided that all the computers that are old at MINTEC, we're not going to discard them. We're only going to remove the cover and sell the cover to other recycling people. But everything else that remains after taking the cover is going to be done at MINTEC and see what the product that we have. And we'll continue and try to engage with other people who are able to get e-waste, so that we become the expert of e-waste in the country going forward. And then on energy and water, there are quite a number of projects that we're doing in energy and water. For example, looking at reduction of energy that is used in furnaces. You must remember that we've got furnaces as well as Mintec. But whatever knowledge that we gather ourselves as Mintec is the one that we project also outside. The recycling and reuse of water, waste removal prior to processing. I think members will remember that I said in the past that we've got technologies that we use in trying to avoid using a lot of water in mineral processing technologies, which, for example, this one is one of the examples that we have, and we've utilized these methodologies as well, we've tried to utilize it as well on the coal industry. We are currently investigating in partnership with the African Exploration Mining and Finance Company, or the state-owned mining company, to see how we can upgrade our coal using sensor sorting type of a thing. It has not been used in the past. In the past, the sensor sorting that has been used in the coal industry was what you call a destoning of material, which is removing stones out of coal. This technology that now we're doing for them, and we're still piloting with them, is going beyond destoning. Okay? Is going beyond in the sense that the sensors that we put in this machinery will tell what is coal, what is good coal, and what is not coal. Okay? So the pilot has worked very well. In a few months' time, we're moving to an area next to Flafontein Mine, which is the mine of the state-owned company, where we'll be introducing this methodology and see whether it works on a large scale as well. The other operating system that we use is a partnership with a Russian company called Rados, and we've done quite a lot of work for PGM companies, and we've done it also for low-grade chromite, and we'll continuously have a look as to how bigger material can be utilized in this methodology that we are doing. The next program, as I've indicated earlier, is on R&D. I'll just showcase a few things. Under the IRG, we've got a division which is called Measurement and Instruments. In short, we call it MAC. That division is looking at instrumentation that can be used in mineral processing in order to make mineral processing quicker or faster and reduce the cost. For example, we've developed what we call a spiral monitoring device, which is shown there on the left, which is a device that is trying to control your sand, your bit sand, quicker into the different materials and minerals that it constitutes. So we are hopeful that this will help such companies in reducing their cost. The second material that division is utilizing, if you look at the right-hand side there, you've got quite a big block of a type of a thing. That the current machinery that we use as Mintec for the companies to measure their cyanide. We know the problem that cyanide causes, especially with the gold mining companies, when that cyanide can spill into water, it affects contaminated water. That is the type of instrument that we're using now. But if you look at the slide on the left-hand side of there, you can see that instrument that looks like a cell phone. So we're trying to move away from that big gadget and develop a smaller gadget that the person can carry and be easy for the person to measure cyanide rather than using a bigger machinery. So that's a revolution that we're putting up into the industry. And we think we'll get a good uptake because that's a cheaper machine to maintain, and it's very easier to handle. And the other intervention that we have done, not on instrumentation now, another division there on R&D, which is called biotechnology. It's introducing biological methodologies in helping companies. Here is a company, Mondo Minerals, which is a company that is in Finland. That company has been producing from rough talc, has been producing clean talc. What we have done is gone in between the two stages for them of moving from rough talc into clean talc. We've come into a position by using bioleaching in order for them to be able to extract from their ore, which they were only extracting talc in the past, to be able now to extract nickel. Okay? Which we think it's an advantage for that company, because now that company will be able to get financial resources not only from talc alone, but from talc and also saleable nickel. The other project that we have is a project, if you look on the left-hand side, that bottle with dirty water from water effluent that comes out from the mining. This water has a quite high chromium 6 element in it, which is toxic, and with our biological methodology, we're able to reduce that chromium and in water in order for it to make it a bit better than what it is. So we've got a special project of looking at water effluent from the mining sector to try and reduce toxicity of water that comes out from the mine. On the RNG, the last project that we have, last week we unveiled what we call the clean room. I hope at one point the members of the committee will be able to come and visit me there and see themselves what is it that that institution of 8 years is doing. Because it's quite revolutionary. What we're doing, a clean room is a place which is considered to be the most clean place in laboratories. Why did we develop? It cost us 9 million rands to develop the clean room, which is a project that took us, I think, about 18 months to complete, and it was officially opened last week by the Minister of Science and Technology, because we got the funding from DST, from the Department of Science and Technology. One of the major things that we'll be doing in this laboratory, that we were doing in the past, but not under clean conditions, and because we're doing it in the past, not under clean conditions, our work could not be accredited. Now our work is going to be accredited. And on top of it, this facility is not going to be a military facility. It's a national facility. Whoever wants to utilize that facility will be allowed to utilize it under certain conditions. We don't want to say this is a military team or project. This is for the country. This is the bill for the country, not for military. Actually, when the minister was opening it, a day before opening it, she had a meeting with her other counterparts in the rest of the continent, where she was telling them that this is a facility for the continent. It's not a facility for only us in South Africa. What the first thing that we're going to produce under same conditions are test kits. Okay, MINTEC has already started producing test kits for HIV and AIDS. Okay, but unfortunately, the ones that we've tested them internally because we were not having clean facility. Going forward, we are going to look at a partner in the pharmaceutical industry who we will sell the test kit to that person. And then that company is the one that is going to market it outside the world and wherever in South Africa, because we are not a pharmaceutical company. The only difference that is there that made us involved in this project is because it's gold that is used in nanoparticles that helps us in developing the test kit that is utilized in order to tell the blood when it drops onto it whether it's a blood to be, is that blood HIV positive or not. That's why we're involved. This is an old project that was started and the gold price was around $290 an ounce. And today we're starting to see the successes of the work that was started in those years. This is an aspiration that when you do research, it takes you many years to be able to get the results of what you want to do. And you need to spend money before you can be able to get whatever you want to get. If I may go back a bit, that's why in South Africa, as we speak today, there's no mining company that is still having a research institution. Not even a single one. The last company that had a research institution was JBS Anglo. And they're selling. Because a research institution always needs a facility. Without a financial support, you can never, on a financial basis, you can never enter a research institution. Having said that, I will go to the next now. It's the issue of what I called as the interventions that we have in developing very urban people and people in the rural areas. We have a number of projects that we've been doing in the past, looking at people with a disability in order for them to be able to do something on with their hands. The projects that we do are on ceramics, bead making from glass or from bottle, and all the jewelry. We have had the latest intervention that we have now. It's two projects that we have in the Northern Cape. Those two projects we have in the Northern Cape, one is in Upington, one is in Prinska, and we're supposed to do the third one in Kimba. If the members can remember, the last time we were here, there were a few cheap gifts that we gave to the members of jewelry that was done by these groups. Currently, these groups are 90% youth. And you should see the enthusiasm that is on the eyes of those youth when they understand that they have something to do. And we are hopeful, because this is this is the NDF funding we got from Treasury for 3 years, and this is the last year of the 3-year program. We are hopeful that when we go back to Treasury and motivate and show them what you see now on the screen are some of the products that are made by these people. We start them knowing absolutely nothing, and they end up producing things like this. We are hopeful that when we go back to Treasury and ask for more project-based funding, we'll be able to get the funding. This would have been possible to happen without the assistance of MQA and also the NYGA, who are the people who have helped us to pay for stipends for this youth. If I may add, we have already started approaching the Department of Small Industries to see whether we can partner with them.
I don't want to cut you.
Yes, sir.
The Isabella group of them.
Okay, I'll go for the speaker.
Sure. I'm sorry about that, to remind you.
Yes, I think
I know you're very passionate.
Yeah, I'm passionate to take anything from you.
Okay, no, it's quite informative, but
yes,
I'm just reminding, I know. Okay. I promise my members that we will do this on time. I don't want them to not to believe me when I say that next time. No.
Thanks, sir.
Okay.
These are the interventions that we have in the SADC region, our involvement in the SADC region. On human capital, I think I talked a lot on human capital at the beginning, so I'll pass over it. This is where we are on employment equity currently. This is where we are. As an institution, we're at 34.4% females and 62.2% males, out of a total of 704 persons. And these are the targets that we put forward for ourselves. Currently, when it comes to Africans, as I said, we are at 74%, so it's going to be easy for us to reach the 2%. When it comes to colored Indians, we are already on top of it, and the only problem that we have is the total number of females, which we will be looking at. And on human capital, we have external human capital and internal. External is who we act with in order to promote mining, and the work that we do internally is looking at our strategy. You can see when you look at the bursaries, the number of bursaries that we give to full-time, which is full-time students, is decreasing, whilst we're concentrating on the employees that we have and try to increase with the employees that we have. These are the institutions that we're in partnership with. And the major issues that we're going to do this year as far as development of our human capital, we are hosting in a month's time, we're hosting a meeting at Women in Daba, which is inward focusing at looking what are the problems that we're encountering for us to be able to have more women in tech. It will be women-led, and we're hopeful that it will work very well. When it comes to finances, I think I've talked a lot about finances. I'll skip this slide because I've talked about it. When you look at the revenues, you can see that most of our revenues come from product and services and also the state grant. And you can see how the MTF has increased in 2016. In 2015-16, the fund is going to help us going forward, but I'm showing the last slide somewhere the problems that I said at the beginning. In the revenue grant for commodity, this is where we show you in which commodity to spend more of our money. Most of our money, you can see, is spent on efficiency. That's where we look at energy and water. Okay, that's where our concentration is. Revenue analysis as to where does the money come from. You can see local is not a lot. International is not a lot. A lot of our money comes from same resources. Expenditure, sub-costs, you can see the sub-costs, there they are. Overheads are less than the staff cost. So the major cost that we have is from our staff cost. This is just to indicate to show that as we continue generating profits or surpluses, we spend most of our surpluses in capital expenditure. When you look at our surplus, this year we expect a surplus of about 11 million rand, which we will plug back into our operation. The current forecast for this year is around 32 million rands. Financial outlook. I think with the financial outlook, I'll go to that side, which shows us the problem that has been seen. If you look at 2016, we've got a higher state run, and you can see the drop off immediately thereafter. That's going to be a big challenge, especially when our commercial revenues are not increasing. We are facing a serious, serious problem. Conclusion, I think members are aware that we have a stable, well-resourced institution, and I always say members should remember that we are an institution not for profit but for development, and we try to work with other institutions in partnering with them in promoting innovation, and the future doesn't look that bright when you look at our finances going forward. Thank you, Jeff.
Honourable members, any questions?
Honourable, don't ask that question. I was going to ask that question. How are you going to deem the presentation gives us a huge number of names, and then it says something like, don't worry, we'll resolve it by the end of this financial year. Now, I'm looking at what is going to happen to all men. I'm sure you don't even have to look around when you commit the crime. You must just make a red card, prepare your things and leave, because you are opening up space. But it's okay. Honourable Lauren?
Thanks, sir. First of all, page 5. You're missing a word. I'd love to know what it was. Mining sector. Commercial environment is very, very what? Bottom slide. Bottom slide, example. The following slide. You say expect slowdowns to bottom up late 2015 and surge in investment exploration project development from 2017. What informs that? I mean, that's good news, but what makes you say that? Then onto your projects, and two that I followed for the last several years with great interest. Javelin for a start. Finished by June, you say. So when you say finished, does that mean that you will have final costing on what it will cost to treat water? What happens in June? What will we know by then? And then the rare earth pipe project. It doesn't seem to me that there are signs, I think, that the rare earth market is picking up. And how far does it have to pick up before this project is going to be viable? I mean, do prices have to return to, say, what they were in 2008? Would that make it viable? At what point does it become a project worth doing? And I'll confine myself to that. Thank you.
I thought that thing is going now. He's back again. Honorable Machala and Honorable Mafola.
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Chair. You made mention of you're going to host a Mint and Women Ndawa. What is the purpose of this Ndawa? Women only. Is it maybe to replace men who are in top position, or what is it? I'm not sure. Just pray your peace.
My question. Let me return the presentation. My question is on the procedure that you follow when you have to rehabilitate someone, when you are giving it up to rehabilitate. So you mentioned some of the issues, like you have to go and make certain arrangements. Do you take the agency of the matter into consideration? Because sometimes you'll find that the door or that rehabilitation is nearer to the people where it can cause danger. And then you said you have some of the community development in Northern Cape. Do you think of going to other provinces to do the same thing? Thank you.
I you can answer that question, but my request will be one, so that the next team that is coming must be ready. I want to swear it's going to agree with you. On slide 7. I'll ask that question there, and you must be closer to them. Yeah, on slide 7. I don't want to talk to the rest. Okay, you can answer, Phil.
Thanks, sir. The first question was why the upside in 2017? I think my colleague from CGS will attest to that, because he has already started doing activities within the continent, the high activity within the continent. So that's why I expect that by 2017, that activity will come to maintain mineral processing. It was currently processing to see an happen in that activity, in the processing activity. So that answers that. Something in June happened thereafter. I think maybe I rushed a bit. What I said was that currently up to June, we'll be looking at the chemicals that were utilized currently as well. How often can we irrigate them? How often can we turn water around them to take out those effluents? Okay? And then thereafter, once we know that, we'll go back, because the other divisions that we take were doing quite a lot of issues on water, you know, on purifying water, and check whether we can augment. Because remember, I said at the beginning, the most critical thing is not get clean water, because no way would get clean water. The most critical thing is to lower the cost. So after June, after we've done what we're doing here at Sub-Mean, we now come back to MinTech and compare it with other methodologies that we have at MinTech and see whether we can combine those methodologies. But depending on the price we get with the work that we do between now and then. If the price of water after this work that we've done is already very low, so the chances of us of incorporating other methodologies at MinTech will be lesser. But if it's still high, then we'll try to incorporate other methodologies. With the RAF, it's not a matter of price in the sense of saying, currently the price is low down now, so it's not possible for us. It's not like that. It's only that when the price is down, few companies operate. Then when the price is up, more companies operate. For example, if the price suddenly goes up by 30-40%, then probably it will take other projects that are dominant now to come up, because we are ready for them at any time. Okay, I hope that answers you. The process of rehabilitation, when it comes to the process of rehabilitation, we're very conscious of the communities. We irrespective of the agents of doing the work. If you rush doing the work without having gone to the Nkosi or Nkosi at the Dao and convincing Nkosi that you have to do this work and why you have to do it and why do you have to, because even after you appointed the person to do it, you must first go and introduce that person. The reason why Udlamini Ovela Etekwini Masukumede Oluka. We have had such a situation. We went back to Nkosi, and fortunately, it was later around Great Town. Fortunately, we got Nkosi was very understanding. He understood that we are bringing a job to the local people. Unfortunately, they don't have the technical expertise. So we got somebody else from somewhere else who's got the technical expertise who do the work. So we're very conscious. I've worked with Amakhosi for the first 7 years of my life, and I know that you really need to have them, and they would understand if you talk nicely to them. The last one shared was community development in Northern Cape. It's a current project. We've had projects in the Northwest. We have projects in Gauteng, project in KZN. So wherever there's material and wherever there's money to help us to do it, we'll always go there. The last one was MinTech Women in Alo. So, sorry, Chair, I need to enlarge a bit here. In 1985, it was for the first time where mining companies in South Africa employed big black people as professionals. It was 1985. It was for the first time that we had black people as professionals. I remember it was, that is the year where you have the highest employment of people in the mindset. Okay, that's us when we started working in this industry. That was in 1985, where we allowed legal to get into the house. We had a lot of problems. Okay, we experienced a lot of racism. Okay, it was only around 1992 when women of South Africa were first allowed to offer to be professionals on the mine. And we were already there for 7-8 years before that. So we had to help them to come into the industry and guide them and help them. This women endeavor is not only for women. It's for women and men. But with the leadership of women, where the women stand up in the podium and say, you, Gomez Zulu, the CEO of MinTech, between 1, 2, 3, that makes you not to be promoted at MinTech. How are you going to change? This is the aim of this women endeavor. That's why it's managed by the board of MinTech. The board of MinTech that came up with this idea, knowing the history of what happened in the industry. So some of us were there in the 80s, in the Indus, looking into the Indus, and we're able to enter in women in the 90s, we're able to stand up and say, this and that we think is going to help you. I mean, to give you an example, that there are so many good things that have been done by the women in the Indus. The mining charter, for those who don't know, the mining charter that we have, the first draft of that mining charter was signed by a black woman. Okay? The BE charter that you saw from DGI, the first growth of that document was signed by a black man. So there are so many good things that women are doing. We just need to help them because we were there before them. Okay? We were there before them. Let's help them. So it's only the case of saying, if you climb the ladder, look down at the ladder, you'll find somebody who needs to be put. And when you get up at the top of the pulley, that person, if you look back, that person will say thank you to you. Okay, thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, just one comment. I would really appreciate if you give us the name of the project if it is recently deponent for him in other provinces so that when we are able to look at this project. Thank you.
And I hope members looking at them will also motivate wherever you go that Nishek has done very well and have more of this.
Okay. The next one?
Okay. Yes. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Firstly, I just wonder if you can hear me.
Okay.
Firstly, I'd like to tender an apology for Professor Mwepe, our chairperson. I think because of the late rearrangement of the meeting, he couldn't make it for this meeting today, similar with the chairperson of UNICEF. But I don't think we'll be missing anything in terms of the report of the piece. To be given the opportunity to be able to table this final performance plan for 2015-2016, including the budget for the Council for Geoscience. The structure of the presentation is based principally on the planning framework for public entities and government departments, and we'll be touching on things such as the major direction of the organization in terms of its mission, vision, and values. We'll touch briefly on the evolution of the mandate of the organization and what are the different elements that influence it. A brief situational analysis which informs some of the choices we make going forward in terms of the strategy going forward for the organization. We set the tone for assessing the performance in terms of the performance plan. So we'll deal with the strategic outcome-oriented goal as well as the strategic objectives. I'll then reflect on the achievements of 2013, 2014, and because of time, and also because those achievements have already been presented previously in the meeting that it was in September last year with the annual report of the Council for Audio Science. So I'll really hit the highlights, and I would like to urge members if there's anything specific there that they would like to ask, but I'm not going to spend too much time on those slides. Then I'll hand over to Dr. Mahaya to give a reflection on the key programs and projects of the Council for Geoscience that are talking to specific strategic objectives at the project level within the organization. So also then, after that, give some highlights about what we plan to do in the 20... I think there's a graphic type over there. It's supposed to be 2015-2016, and then we will then hand over to the CFO to link that to the budget of the organization. I'll touch briefly on the 5-year institutional review of the Council for Geoscience before I give some comments, closing comments on the IGC. I'm mindful of time, Chair, so I'll move very quickly, and I'd just like to ask members if I'm moving fast, the same point of interest is just slowing down. As I mentioned, we are trying to tailor the presentation to focus on on the reporting framework for strategic and performance plans for public entities. We are obviously a Schedule 3A public entity in terms of the PFMA. The vision and mission statements of the organization have recently been tweaked, and to put it that way, in the strategic planning process that was concluded and approved by the board of the Council for Geoscience late last year. And we now have a vision statement where we are trying to enable a prosperous society through geoscience solutions. Our mission is providing geoscience solutions in South Africa and beyond in line with the foreign policy, particularly on the African continent of development, so that guides us in terms of the activities we pursue on the African continent. The next slide deals with the values that drive the elements of culture and performance within the organization, which we summarize as ideals, which includes innovation, diversity, excellence, accountability, learning, and service delivery. As I mentioned, the Council for Geoscience is a public entity, scheduled 3A public entity in terms of the CFMA Act. The organization draws its legislative and principal legislative mandates in terms of Geoscience Act number 100 of 1993. Summarizes the mandate of the organization, similar to any geological survey you will find anywhere in the world. As what we are observing with other geological surveys in many other countries, including first and developing world countries, that there is a drastic evolution in the mandate of geological, national geological surveys. And in terms of the Council for Geoscience, it's probably best encapsulated in the Geoscience Amendment Act number 16 of 2010, which significantly increases the mandate of the Council for Geoscience. And I think I would like to raise this as something that the committee needs to take account of, because in terms of the funding, which the CFO will reflect on later, there's not a concomitant increase in the resources for the organization in line with the evolution in its mandate. And this is proving to become a problem operationally for Council for Geoscience. And I'll talk about some of the issues that were raised in the presentation earlier this morning by the Director General. For example, they have approached us to try and look at assisting with fingerprinting of gold deposits. This is becoming a strategically important issue against the backdrop of illegal mining in the country. But if you look at it, it is something that, from our perspective, we would need to apply highly specialized geochemical expertise in terms of radiogen isotopes and stable isotopes to be able to do that fingerprinting. It's critically important. And it's not only a question of buying the laboratory equipment, but it's also a question of being able to train people as a high-level geochemist to be able to deal with isotope geochemistry. So that's just one practical example about how important it is for us to start getting funding to improve the laboratory infrastructure of the organization. We've been monitoring the issues around the NPR gay bill. We are aware that it's been sent back to the National Assembly, but in its current formulation, it also contains additional mandates that will come to the Council for the Science in respect of PASA, amongst others. As I mentioned, I think issues related to funding, I can also mention that although the Science Amendment Act has been approved, there are certain aspects of it which have not been promulgated. But with approving, to be significantly important in terms of, for example, issues around development in areas which have got which are underlain by dolomite, which have got the potential to have these caves where you can have subsidence around those developments. And this is, again, quite an important issue that we need to start thinking about in terms of resources. I'm not going to go into any further detail. This is just a summary of the actual mandate of the organization, both incorporating elements of the principal act of Act No. 8 of 1993, as well as the amendment. It's important for us in our planning framework, and we have done that, and I just want to reassure that the committee that in terms of aligning all of our strategic planning with National Development Plan, and we've done that, we have to take into consideration, obviously, issues such as the MTSF, National Innovation System, the current challenges, and so on, in respect of the science mandate of the organization. And I will, again, not going into detail here, but what I have here is just trying to link the specific aspects of the NDP, as well as the programs of the organization, and which ones talk to which in these slides, and I'll leave them to just go through the detail comfortably themselves that's provided in the slides. We've done quite a thorough analysis of the environment of the organization, and I think probably this might augment a little bit some of the comments that I've made a little bit earlier with respect to the evolving mandate of the organization in terms of challenges that we're experiencing. We've been experiencing a steady decline, and I again won't dwell too much on the detail in this, and this is the beauty of our presenting after all, because they have explained this in quite a lot of detail, and that there's been a steady increase in the global drilling activity. And that, by and large, especially for an organization in the upstream of the environment, affects the Council for Geoscience a lot more directly, because we are involved in some of these exploration and sometimes involving drilling activities in projects both on the African continent as well as at home. So a decline in contract revenue at the time of this analysis is a significantly important risk for the organization. Statutory funding, particularly in respect of the baseline grant, I think project-related or ring-fence funding has been, we've benefited quite a lot as an organization in terms of that. The issue we are having is that the lack of a review of the baseline grant of the organization is becoming problematic for an institution such as the Council for Design, because this institution, in all honesty, the funding model which requires us to generate contract revenue could be considered inappropriate in certain contexts. So it needs to be looked with the unique merits of the mandate of the organization and role that this institution plays in terms of minerals industry in the country. Issues such as laboratories, which was illustrating earlier, would be issues that ideally would be funded as part of the capitalization through the baseline grant. And I leave the CFO a little bit later in the presentation to expand a little bit on that. I've mentioned the fact that we need to be able to be capacitated to implement fully the provisions of the Geoscience Amendment Act 16 of 2010. The aging infrastructure, I think the members, when they did an oversight visit up to Victoria, we did give you a flavor of, although we didn't get a chance to tour all of our laboratory facilities. I think an issue that might come up a little bit later, but it's important for you just to put a little bit of background on it. When we're talking on issues of infrastructure, we've had, towards the end of 2012, demolished part of the laboratory complex of the organization, which housed the engineering geological laboratory, because part of what that laboratory would have to do would have to be to bring in both soil as well as rock materials that are going to be used in major infrastructure development. And the equipment that was there to try and testing such as tensile strength and so on with these very heavy equipment has resulted in the structural foundations of that part of the complex, and we have said it is D-block, that it had to be demolished because the building was starting to collapse on the rest of the B block of the organization. Hence, the necessity for us to limit the structural damage to the rest of the building, right, just getting rid of that portion of the building. But I think principally the issue also is that if we demolish that portion of the building, we need to be able to reconstruct it in an appropriate environment and be able to capacitate it. And at this stage, we do not have that capacity to replace that functionality in the organization. We are seized at the moment with the project which started essentially beginning of 2013, which is to ensure that we can organize ourselves internally as an organization to be able to deliver against the developmental priorities of the country. And the project is ongoing over the next 5 years. The strategic outcome-oriented goals of the organization include, amongst others, the fact that CGS must be the employer of choice for us to be able to attract talent and retain it within the organization, which is an aspect that we've been challenged by for a number of years in the organization. We need to, as I mentioned, need to ensure that we do not only face in strategy governance, but that the delivery infrastructure of the organization allows us to be able to respond positively to the developmental priorities of the country. And the issue around financial viability, again, I've spoken quite a lot with it. I'm specifying here that these are cross-cutting strategic objectives because in terms of the framework, we applied to report those in terms of the programs, and I'll leave that to Dr. Mahaye to deal with that. These are other aspects that are referring at the organizational level, that the issue of generation of income is an alternate mechanism to complement the deficiencies in our baseline grant becomes critically important for the success of the strategy. We need to manage the issue of overhead, address stakeholder needs amongst others. We need to drive preferential procurement, which is also an element that we've had quite a significant challenge with, particularly on significant capital acquisition items. I've mentioned the fact that we need to attract and retain skilled workforce to be able to meet the evolving scientific challenges of the organization. We have started a project which leads to the organization in terms of its accreditation with ISO 9001 as well as the environmental standard as well, amongst others to deal with issues of levels of excellence and so on. In terms of the achievements, again, I'm just looking at time. Chair, would you like for me, this is quite a little number of slides. It's been presented to the committee in September. Okay. I think I will then skip these slides and say I think they've been presented, but I'm happy to take questions during the question time to lose any particular questions that the committee might have. I'll then move directly from here to one of the things I would like to mention. Obviously, we're coming to present here on the 2015-2016 ATP. It's just to indicate that in terms of the performance measures for the 2014-2015 year, those are currently in the audit process and will be reported with the annual report at the end of September. So they are not reported yet, just so that to account for the disparity between the 2013-2014 performance information which is here and the missing 2014-2015 as well as the ADP 2015-2016. I hope that makes sense, Chair. I'll hand over to Dr. Hai to talk to the project from the organization.
You are machine and Susan.
Good afternoon, honorable members. Within CGS, we have four business trusts. We have mapping at the center, and we have water and environment trust, engineering and geohazard, and mineral resources and energy. With the mineral resources and energy, that is right, Mr. CEO. We are looking at the section that is looking at the assessment and quantification of minerals within South Africa to actually attract the investors. In particular, the project focuses on the rare earth elements. What we are seeing here is actually a picture of people at work prospecting over certain areas that have been earmarked next slide.
This is just a map of areas where the prospecting and potential areas for future work. Next slide. And with regard to the energy, we are looking at assessment and quantification of energy, minerals and geothermal potential in support for integrated energy plan. In particular, for this particular section, we're looking at petroleum resources, coal resources and uranium resources. And again, when we look at South Africa and into the future, here this is probably to teach more into our future engines. Next slide. This is to show that most of the projects that we have within CGS are linked to the capacity building exercise. For example, this move, the uranium exploration that is looking to the coal in the Northern Cape is actually Minalo's PhD study. And the two candidates, the other one is actually a PhD candidate, the other one is an NSC candidate. They are probably going to finish their study soon. Next. This is actually a distribution of the uranium resources in South Africa. Yes. Yes, we quite often get to be asked what is happening in the Eastern Cape. We have the dimension stone that we call black granite that we are also looking at potential business for the future and to actually allow people to come and make money out of this precious stone. Next. What we are seeing here is the distribution of coal mines in South Africa. We have a database where when you log in, you are able to see where potential coal fields are in the country and where interested investors could actually go and mine coal. Next. We have Dr. Naniba Lumbashi here, DC in the lab. He's actually heading the coal lab, analyzing samples to check for impurities and all that. Next. With regard to the mineral and the energy sector, the thrust that we're looking at, we are looking at the thrust that is going to look at the minerals that we have in South Africa to actually attract investors in South Africa, in so doing, working in line with the National Development Plan of South Africa. Next. The next slide, we're talking about that. Again, stimulating investment of minerals in South Africa. These are the target areas CGS is looking at. Next. We are looking at the project that is taking place in KZN. Next. Namakwa Land, Northern Cape. Next. With regards to mapping, we are looking at the Namakwa Land and also the KZN. What you are seeing here is the geochemical mapping of the area. Next. What we are seeing in this particular slide, we are saying, instead of sampling the area far from each other, for you to get comprehensive information, you need to actually get samples close by so that you can get detailed information. Next. This is how detailed the information will be. Just by looking at the 1 kilometer area, you are able to get about 192,000 samples roughly. Next. With operations like this, the president is talking about the onshore mapping to actually unlock the economic potential of our oceans. We are involved with the marine geophysics. Next. Technology has advanced. In the past, what you see with you on the left-hand side, which is a map on paper, but with technology, we are able to actually get high resolution of the kind of commodities or mineral resources that we find in South Africa. Next. Here, this is potential energy needs for the future. What you are seeing here is the potential areas where people have actually applied for drilling or should I say exploration. But at this present moment, there is no benchmark towards shale gas at all. Next. The other part that I've highlighted is the geohazard. With geohazard, you're looking at, next slide. With geohazard, you're looking at the areas that are susceptible to earthquakes, and in particular, those areas where mining took place next. On this particular slide, we're looking at the copper exploration in the Northern Cape, Upington. Next. The geological storage of carbon dioxide. Here we are saying people are starting to talk about carbon dioxide and it having a problem with regard to climate change. How can we deal with the carbon dioxide? And we are saying our geological commission in South Africa can actually help in this regard. The areas that we are seeing the dots green, they are actually saying there's potential for us to use our geological commission to capture the carbon dioxide. Yes? Around Johannesburg, in particular St. Sudan, we have problems with the sinkholes. That's where the engineering research is involved. And we have several projects in this regard. Yes. We also have the South African National Seismograph Network stations scattered around all, most of these areas where mining took place and where mining is taking place. Next. These are the seismic activities around the country. Next. We also have the cluster of city mining areas. In particular, this is mostly around Gauteng, the central basin, far west line, the coast, and around Belgium. Next. This site, or the trust, is the Water and Environmental Trust. It talks about the impact of mining to our environment and our communities. This project is well known as the Derelict and Ownerless Project, where we've done the field investigation. We are also looking at the closure of mine holdings in Limpopo and Gauteng. Those of entities of the highly prioritized asbestos site, and of course, we have an annual review of the DMR's liability. Next slide. This is the distribution of the ownerless mines in South Africa. Next slide. To date, we have actually managed to visit about 65% of the ownerless mines. Only 35% remains still to be visited. Next slide. This is the good work that we've done. The green talks about the coverage of the mine sites that have been visited and those that have been changed. Next slide. When we start talking about the annual liability, people say 6,000 is a lot, but when we start going to visit those mines, we realize that most of those mines are now operational. Some of those mines do not actually require rehabilitation because it was mainly sand or aggregate mining. Next slide. These are some of the achievements that we have achieved in the last financial year. Next slide. We are also placing ourselves close to communities. This is just a typical picture of the different issues where you find that there's a shaft close by, there's also infrastructure. We demolish the infrastructure, we close the shaft. Next slide. And of course, within the environment and water track, what we're also looking at is helping the Department of Water Affairs with rural water supply, because when we look at our communities, we also struggle with water, and we have the sophisticated equipment to help the department in dealing with the water. These are the facilities that we have within CGS. What you see in there is the Cessna, this boat for marine geology, and also the helicopter, and I should think this is the core jet and the museum. Next slide. Our projects are not necessarily looking into South Africa. We also look at other African countries, in particular Malawi, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Zambia, and Botswana. Next slide. Can you skip this one? Next slide. Can you skip this one? Around February, March, there was a key meeting in Canada, and what you see here is Minister Ngakoro Matsudi at the VGS group. Next slide. Let's look at the annual performance for 2015-2016. Obviously, our target is going to make sure that we have to generate revenue. Next slide. We're also looking at working towards the contribution to South Africa's economic growth and to serve our stakeholders. Next slide. And to promote the CGS by disseminating information to the public and also to the industry. Next slide. As the government organization, we have to work within certain policies and procedures, and we have targets to adhere to those policies and procedures. It is very important that as an organization, we need to attract and retain a skillful workforce. Yes. We also need to build a positive organizational culture, because within the organization, culture is very important so that we become as productive as we're supposed to be, and to embrace diversity of the way we are in South Africa.
Well, Thank you, honorable members and honorable chair. The booklet that is so inspiring and, you know, it's everybody's proud of can only happen if there's money to make it happen. Where does this money come from? We are very grateful that we still have an allocation from the National Treasury. We're getting the Darwin Grant. With that on top, on the, if you get the first row on my slide there, which is simply covering a period of 4 years, including last year at the baseline. The next three lines that are required in terms of PFA, the plan for the 20-year period, are shown there in the last three columns. And then the first row is the grant that we get, money that we get from the government. It's a substantial amount, and it grows substantially over the years. It's what I'm saying is it's almost the same similar problem with MinTech, where we've got our baseline very much growing in line with inflation. But however, we've got the reference finding that is projects that are built to be of importance for a particular period, and after which we don't receive that funding anymore. So it's very much stated, but you know, the same value that you get every year, and that actually puts the challenge in growing the council, as you have already elaborated. But what is more given, it is as what is actually even more of a challenge or of something that you should look into is that we take time, that is the second road, to generate revenue ourselves. It's not the best thing to generate revenue, but at what cost? That is the main question. At the time in a year where we should be spending money to actually do work for South Africa is being spent elsewhere, either to in private industry or in other international countries, such as the North. We've already shown a number of countries that we would do good work for. And that takes time. It's an opportunity lost for South Africa in that the work we do is done mainly to attract investment. As such, what we do trying to earn money is actually cutting our own spaces, cutting our own notice by our spaces in that sense that investors are going to invest due to the work that we've done in other countries, but our own. So if we're generating money locally only, that would be the one thing. But because we can't operate without money, we have to do work outside South Africa. The third row on that green is interest that we make generate from money that invested. It's almost the same identical model as invested. I can't overemphasize just that this should really be looked into, so that we take the time and take advantage and be at the forefront as we want to as a country. Now, where do we spend this money? As an institution, obviously, our main asset is our people. So without scientists, we don't have an organization. So most of our funds are spent on personnel costs. That's not only salaries. That is salaries, fringe benefits, including both retirement, mental aids, all the costs around recruitment, all the training that's directly to our personnel is in the budget. Plus all the additional posts that you might need in 1 year to the next. So if you look at it, it's massive, and the increase of 9% each year, but that is not money that's being given as salaries to people. The 9% increase in the budget, we actually negotiate with unions to settle within reasonable, affordable levels. Of increases within the council. Most of it really would go into it, because there isn't really money free to do the work. It would be you're juggling using money that you should be doing paying salaries to do it at the same time when the salaries are there to be paid to pay salaries. It doesn't get respect all the time. That actually has inherent inefficiency to the ability of the council to deliver its money. Now, the second row is the battery. That's where we're addressing issues of transformation. We have to exactly the same thing, train our own people to absorb into our system, because we are actually developing for the whole country in the sense that most of our young scientists get to leave us simply because our salaries aren't that competitive. We are actually on the 65th percentile, and we do that out of 100 companies, we are still on number 65 to the last.
So 65 companies out of 100 are paying better than us. And I believe that was last year. This year it's always regressing. So they find it easier to poach from us. I mean, people, especially the previous disadvantage, first thing would be to say, let's sustain our families first, and then we get to other secondary things later. So it's very hard to it's an essential component, a pillar component to transform the country. Without that, it really can't transform the country. Now, the next part is the commercial project cost. Those, to me, the money that you bring to foreign companies and they have, you have to invest some money. That's basically about 5% of the money that you decision to make. The 70 and 45% of it is 31 million. The overall, the core, the spending, the operations and all the projects that have been spoken about are included in the 136 million. That is, all operations from your library to your laboratory to your museum to courtship, the money there all in total is included in there. That includes as well funding for the annual thing, the science that you do, the research that you do, all those things that we've been talking about are covered in that 126 million. But there is outside, over and above that, the issue to try and to recapitalize the environment in which we do the science. So the capital expenditure, only the component that goes to replacing equipment like a computer, and that is the small line on top there, for which we budget 10 million and then 12 million and top that, you know, it's the replacement is not really a growth part of the country, just to keep the fund going. Whereas we are very much aware that we've got things like this SRF, we've got really, you know, complicated machinery and equipment that needs to be upgraded and kept up to, you know, top form for us to name the top scientific institution that we have. And then on the last line, there's the CEO talked about the building. We were actually licensing the MTF project, the MTF process, being able to secure some funding to try and to get air conditioning installed, especially in the laboratories where it's essential. We just saw Mintex highlight there that they spent 29 million on a facility that is deemed to be, you know, or three of them or whatever. That's an appropriate facility to do research. We've actually gone in there simply to install the air conditioning to control the temperature in our labs and the building itself. You just have to make the environment conducive. Over and above, which is not included here, which is in the other performance plan, that I want to take members aware of. I didn't put a slide on it, but that is the recapitalization, especially from our reserves. The money that we make from those commercial revenues, the profits thereof, they increase over time. We take whatever we can out of it. Then that's the only source that the council has, especially the major enterprise. And that is the one area that needs further attention. We've put in MTA proposal to try and capitalize both through the CDM hub and DSC, but we haven't been successful. So the level we've got as reserves always is a resource to try and sustain the infrastructure. Can you move to the next slide, please? In terms of the grant, this is just to give a picture of exactly what we are talking about. If you look at the baseline, the first line they're talking about the baseline grant, this is cutting the increment, it's about 5% to 6%, pretty inflationary growth. Then now we have been lucky, I must say, that we've been able to secure reference funding. Those are the projects, that's the mine rehabilitation project that we have just been talked about. That is mine drainage project, we've got money there for the shale gas, and also we've got that the stimulation of investment. Those are, if you look at the slide, the various numbers that have already been allocated to us by Treasury, and those are the ones that are promised for the year 17 and 18. Okay, can you send me to the slide? Okay, this... that's my last slide. Okay, the case in here is that we're looking at the grant, what we know we're going to get as baseline. We're looking at one cost, which is the flood budget. If you compare it to, you'll see that at the bottom, we can't even, with the money that we get, that's a guarantee. we can't even cover our salaries. So first we have to earn money to just cover the salaries and then make money for operations. That is how underfunded the council is. So without taking time and making money out of, and we can't really go to fulfill the mandatory work that it's supposed to do.
So the, as I mentioned earlier, the Council for Japan that many science institutions is required every 5 years to subject itself to critical international review. The board appointed them earlier this year, a five-member panel populated by international Japan luminary potential concept for the organization, and that process has now been concluded. The report has been tabled to the board. It's currently being finalized, and they are able to report next Friday to this committee on the conclusions and the reflections of that committee on how they use the organization compared to other similar organizations globally. And just lastly, I would just like again to appeal for support on the issue of the International Theological Congress, which is going to be held at the Cape Town International Convention Center here in next year, 23rd October to 4th of September. I think the time is moving very, very fast to actually be able to hold this conference, and we are really desperate to get some assistance, particularly from private sector, with respect to sponsorship for us to be able to host the large numbers of some 7,000 to 8,000 delegates that we expect to come very few conference.
Okay. Honourable Member?
The entities, including the department, that in future they must not present a half report. I heard several of them say some of the slides are not included in the entire presentation. And we have to better to have those slides so that we can acclimatize ourselves to some of the things that is taking place in the institutions. I want to check with the Chief Financial Officer of Rika. I heard him say there is a money budgeted for people who are going to do work temporarily in their institution. I wanted to check with him as to whether what is the Labor Relations Act say about employing people for 1 or 2 years after that they leave. I suspect you might end up in jail. They might take you head on and end up in jail. The other one, Chair, relates to what are class people perspective is what this slide is that? I don't know, it's 43, something like that. It talks of a number of papers and articles published. I wanted to check with you as whether are these published in 11 official languages, or there is only they are only published in English, and how do you reach some rural, deep rural areas, in particular where I come from, because now 90% of the populations of this country are very illiterate. The other one, Chair, relates to there is an app here, Chair, that the doctor presented talking about it. It's page 29, high resolution, very much information of sharing there's the correct approach. I couldn't hear you explaining thoroughly what is this map saying. Page 29, yes. Can you go to page 9? You'll see page 29. On the left, on my left, where I'm seated is on my left. Yeah. There you are, on the left. Can you thoroughly unpack what is it that is happening there? I couldn't hear you very well about that. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay.
just for me to maybe you can help Sifo. You know, I come from a province which has got a district called Mkomondov. There was an end there called Ipubesi, that Mkomondov, Ergwan. When one young man asked him a question in a congress of the ANC, why the income is equal to the expenditure. And the old man said, you see, you come from the university and you think you are clever. You want us to write everything here that we put 1847 and you are not going to put it here. Now, I'm looking at your budget. Your budget is very systematic. The figures are the same. The expenditure. It's like you don't anticipate. You know, there's this thing that the petrol price can just increase, fuel price can just increase in a space without giving notice. But the budget will still remain the same. You see? Surely when you budget, you also budget for the... There's no shedding these days. And if there's no plan, you just stick to the budget. You know, that thing has got implication for cost. That when somebody comes crying and says, but this thing at that time we're making the budget was costing this. And which is what sometimes in the public sector of business facing. Failure to look at the escalation cost. Because we're not determining prices. We don't know how much electricity is going to be now after Eskom is doing all what it's doing and gets granted. If I read it correctly. So I really looked at your income and expenditure. They are all the same. Even up to, I suspect up to a cent so that you end on a rent. You see, if you look at this, 359, 399, 438, and you look above 438, 319, oh, the difference here is 8. I can see 819, there is 319. I may assume it's a typing error, isn't it? It's not supposed to be 3. Now, I'm ready to this because sometimes we make this oversight. Link to this, we are an oversight community. Maybe you made the wrong statement, they're not aware. The surplus must be here. You can't hide money from the community and then complain that you don't have money. I heard you correctly saying there's surplus. Obviously, you want to see that surplus. So that when you cry, one thing you say, in any way you've got surplus, it must be given. So you must not be given money. But surely how do we motivate for you to be given more money when you are hiding the one you have? So let's make a sense then. We're not saying anything bad, but we're saying let's get a sense because surely the surplus that you have is for emergency occasions. You cannot find yourself being liquidated when in that process you could respond to that environment. So I think it's crucial. The third point, that's why I said the MINTEC, you must not go. I'm going back to MINTEC and you can confirm if you want to support them, you can support them. MINTEC gave us something here. I happen to have an experience of what they raised. I didn't want to contest them without contesting all of you. In your slide that you gave, MINTEC, at least I've begun visited that place, I can talk about it. There's a slide here which shows red. Red is for construction. I've not been the one in this position. But that red, there's a dark green, something like that. I think there's such a color. There's a dark orange, something there. And it says, on page 7, of MINTEC. MINTEC, it says today, and in the middle of it, it identifies the issue of Oswego as having gone for tender. You see, we've got here few colors. One is planning. The second one is detailed, which is yellow. The third one is saying tender. Why I said it's a dark yellow. You say tender and then red. So when I look at your line there, when it draws and look at Oswego, it says tender. And when you are there visiting in Oswego, there is no way they can be keeping the stage of tendering. Because if in that planning stage, it says, now we're there. That then states itself is highly improbable that it will succeed. You can sit down and you will explain. When we did with the report, we'll go into details about what we saw in Osusu. In fact, when you look at it, planning for it starts from the actual amount of money that has been spent and the other one that has been withdrawn, the relocation and what is actually going to be done in the area. There are many questions that you asked about it. So if really there is in the process of tender, that's why I asked the two of you, because I know you're working on that project in terms together. That is a common understanding that you are now at a tendering stage for what? If we can get clarity, tendering for what? Because what we are seeing there, including the possibility of the relocation of the school, is impossible. With what we reported or the fight between the provincial government and the previous person who was going to be constructor. So I'm looking at, so that we understand, we don't get, as we're there, we'll talk different things. So those are the issues for me for now that I'll be seeking clarity on. Thank you. If you want to, let's start with the Council for Geoscience and then we'll end with you and the Council for Geoscience combined.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Honourable Members. If I can maybe jump in with the first question of missing information and half reports. I think maybe I didn't make myself exactly clear what I was trying to say there. I was just trying to make clear, because if you remember how we put together the report, we've used the framework for reporting on, I'm just trying to get to the beginning just so that I can explain what I'm trying to say here. That planning framework and putting together this, because I just want to make sure that we don't miss information that might be necessary for the committee. And reviewing this, you can see that the APP has already been tabled in Parliament for through the Minister. You then have to assume that members have somehow seen this information. So you can't really present information that the committee has actually interacted with. And what I've done in putting together the report, I've then said, let's then look at what is in respect of the previous year of the ADP, the information that is public that's already been audited, and that's 2013, 2014. And then the current information for the year ended in March, the 1st of March, which is 2014, 2015 information, that we can't make it available at this stage because it still hasn't been presented to the board and it is still undergoing an auditing and verification process. But that information is coming in September. So what we are now presenting here is actually what the question has asked is 2015-2016 APP, which is a forward-looking APP, which is what are our targets for that period, for 2015-2016. And that's why I'm saying it's just the structure of the reporting process. I don't know if I'm being clear here and here trying to explain it this way. So there's, at this point, no missing information in terms of the timeline for the reporting, for the reporting framework. Then I think question number two and question number number five, before the CFO. Chair, concern has been raised in regards to us being compliant to the amended Labour Relations Act, which was effective from the 1st of April this year. There are two principles that are really that we look into. The one, essentially, we've got a ceiling of to which group is it applicable. If there's a threshold there that's also of 205, a quantum of 215, 205, I'm not, I can't recall, but there is a threshold, and if you end anything less than that, then it applies to you. That is where you've got an expectation created,
and that you've got a that there is waste that you're being used continually, and you expect that that waste will be there continually. It's you are supposed to be employed permanently because you fall within that quantum, and that expectation has been created. In terms of the Council for Geoscience, the kind of scientists that we're talking about are far above, mostly far above the threshold number one. And those that are there that are interns are not interns in terms of considered employees in terms of the labor relationship. And we had only one particular employee that we had to actually take because of not to comply with the act. There's only one that fell within that threshold. We will consider and have accordingly resolved. So there isn't any debate around the LRA for the country. And the next question was in regards to the budget. Chair, in terms of the PRMA, what we want against is to not budget for a loss. We shouldn't spend money, because what they are saying is the plan to spend money that you don't have. Okay, and the best plan would be, I've got this money, I've got 100 billion to use 100 houses, at the end of the year, I don't have rollovers, and I've planned properly, and I've executed my plan. So I haven't got money to repay that to the fifth plan. I've actually delivered in terms of service. That is the context in which the budget is prepared, where we say, this is the money that we need to have, and then where are we going to spend it on? It doesn't preclude the situation that we are in, what you call accrual accounting, where there are obviously profits. Some of them might be generated on the last day. But in terms of planning, they should at least be committed to some project. They might not be executed, but you know where this money is going. And hence, at the end of the each year, we have to say, this is the profit that resulted from the plan. We had the plan equal to what we expected people to spend. We've taken cognizance of contingencies such as the inflation and all the unexpected expenses that are included. That is included when you do the budgeting. Those are the things that you take cognizance of when you prepare this 3-year budget. So they are already taken care of. Now, when the money left over, we have got an obligation again in terms of the paper. We actually request national treasurer to retain whatever surpluses that there may be. But the intent should not be for you not to have surplus. The intent is for you to generate funds and spend it so that there's subsidy.
The next question was the same guest one, slide 29. There is a potential for shale gas in the Gabon. And there are people who are interested in this gas exploration around South Africa. Yet to date, there is no information available as a benchmark. It is therefore the responsibility of CGS to then go and do research so that we can have this information as a benchmark. It is for this reason that when you see the presentation by our CFO, it's stating that we have now been offered funding to do research in changes around the Karoo.
Okay.
No, the issue of shale gas stops there. Now, I'm going to add another question that you raised with regards to the publications. The thing that is just so unfortunate that our publications are in English. But we do have our outreach programs during the science week and the water week. But our outreach programs are mostly to schools. And we also invite schools to come to our museum. But I should think that with the kind of work that we are doing as the Council of Nature Science, it is very critical that we need to disseminate the kind of information we have to the communities, to particularly at provincial level, to say, province X, there are these potential resources
that we have that can be exploited. And I should think this is something that we need to really work hard towards.
I just wanted to explain, because I think the chair did indicate that we've worked on Oswin, and that's technically correct. But I think what we have to separate, we've done two different projects, because that's what I was trying to explain. We have done work prior to Mintec getting involved to deal with the issues of the derelict and ownerless mines in the rehabilitation in Oswin. The project we were involved with, and it dates probably 8 years now, long before this project started, was that you're producing a 150,000 geological calmer of Oswin. And that's what brings us to the area, because we know and understand the geology. And I understand, I haven't actually been to the area myself in recent times, but there was a clay deposit around which the community needed to be moved. And that's where the hope can come in. But the project that we've been involved with is not the one that they are involved with, it's separate.
Thanks, Chef. I'm happy that you have asked about those season projects. It's not an easy, straightforward project. It's very complicated. And I think, as was said here, there are only two people who are sitting in this house who started this project. And they know it from beginning to end, and nobody else is still in government on that project. But I won't go to the history. I'll go to the current issues, of course. We've got the provincial structure that is led by the provincial court. And they... Yes, Chair. Yes. 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 That's what I'm asking, Chair. Because there are different roles for different people who are affected in the project. Because if I go directly to the answer, there are a few things that are the basis of the answer that would love the members to understand. Mintec has got its own role, COPTED got its own role, DMR has got its own role, the Department of Health, Provincial Department of Housing has its own role, the Department of Education Provincial has its own role. Mintec's role is to prepare that place gets rehabilitated. The others have got their own role of moving the school, of moving the houses. That's not a Mintec role. Okay? But that is not a Mintec role. Somebody else knows. What I did about 3 months ago, I went to that meeting before the community came there. I went to that meeting and said, if I'm sitting in this meeting as Mintec, I'll be ready in March to put up the tender to rehabilitate the area. Will you be ready, Mr. Housing? Will you be ready, Mr. DMR? Will you be ready, Mr. Education? Nobody answered me. I said, because you're not answering me, at the end of March when I'm ready, I'll write a document to all of you and say, I'm ready. Are you ready? Because I want to talk. So what I'm going to say, check. Let's not look at the slides with water money in isolation. Let's look. It was strategical that the document is the presentation. In each and every page, there are two things. If you look at page 7, there are two things which talk to one another. If you go to bullet number 3, the top feature, the top one. If you go to bullet number 3 says, rehabilitation design for which is when it lay and completed and submitted to DMR. If you go to the last bullet that says, also bid with design of 4 sites, on which a decision will be taken around September 2015 as to where to proceed with the construction or to defer until further contracts. Those two bullets are talking to one another. The bullet that the office says, this has finished, ready to put up a tender. It's waiting for you to tell us, which is, we are removing the school today, we are removing the people who are there so that we can get it, because we need to get it immediately when those people are removed. However, if we are unable to remove those people by September, then we'll work on other projects in order not to make sure that the money for Oswin is not all over but is utilized somewhere else with the permission of Trader. So from our side of Mintec, we've been ready since March, and so we say,
all the documentation that shows that the tender is ready. We can publish it tomorrow if you say so. It's been given to GMR. We're waiting for GMR to say, yes, go on. Then we put up the tender, Chair.
Let me help you. You see, the issue is not, the first of my is that there is no, the process is not on tender. I understand you have prepared documentation for tender. Now, the point I was is that your arrow, where it's pointed, it should have been between your finished detailing and the beginning of the tender. So that we can get clarity on one issue. Because it was a possibility in the near future, looking at it, that's why I said we'll give you the ease of that process there. A possibility in the near future that there can be anything that is being done, having been there, is highly unlike. In fact, when we discuss, might even differ with what the department has initially taken action on. But let's leave. The point I was trying to say, for me, I was trying to say, because when somebody goes and look at this, even on both areas, that first bullet point, bullet three is alright. Exactly the arrow that one argues, that the arrow on bullet three, or the arrow here should be consistent with bullet three. I agree that the detailed design is done. But the process of tendering, the preparing a design of a tender, the process of tendering has not begun. I think that's the point that we want to run. But on that note, honorable members, Badangi, you have done very well, and thank you for even being patient with me. I always prefer that when you do work, and tomorrow you wake up, you relax. Friday is your day. I'm giving you a free day on Friday. Free day on Friday. Thank you very much. We will meet next week, Wednesday, and hopefully we'll prepare all COs and COs and Ubabusiza who are fully.
We might come back to all of you, have you gone to...